meeting. Welcome back, colleagues, from the festive season and the recess. Good to see you back in full force in the new year. It was not a good year, 2020, more especially towards the end. We have lost so many colleagues. Welcome back, Deputy Minister and your team from Treasury. Welcome back, the Auditor General and your team. You are also welcome to this meeting. Welcome back, officials of Parliament. I hope you also had a good rest. And welcome everybody who is participating in this meeting. As I've said, that we have lost quite a number of colleagues in the NCOP, NA, and also members of Parliament, staff of Parliament. I would like to request that we have a moment of silence in remembrance of our colleagues. Can we have a moment of silence? May their souls rest in peace. I thank you.
The length of the moment of silence, Chair, proves that you are indeed a praying man. Sometimes the moment of silence, it is just 3 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very painful how... every week you read, you get a message, you see a poster of colleagues, even in municipalities, in legislatures.
Yes.
We have lost so many people. Late last year and beginning this year. Not only here in Parliament, but also in provincial legislatures.
Exactly. And in families.
No. Quite bad, and I hope the issue of the vaccine will be addressed so that we're able to deal with this pandemic. Apologies, Alan, you gave the apology of... and who else?
That's right, Chair. It's only Buthelezi. I see in the meanwhile, Hill Lewis has also joined, so it's...
Okay. No, thanks very much. Let's move to item 3, briefing by the Auditor General on audit outcome of National Treasury. Auditor General, you are welcome to this meeting to make a presentation on the audit outcomes of National Treasury. Over to you. You can introduce yourself. I'm not sure whether it's the Auditor General herself or representatives from your office, but whosoever is leading the delegation will introduce him or herself and the team that he or she is leading. Over to you, AG.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to the honourable members. Chair, it's me, it's Solis Ogoa,
When I was in transport and the Prasa, now we meet here.
Exactly, Che. Our paths are meeting again, are crossing again, Che.
The world is very small. You are welcome, Tantesu, and your colleagues. You can proceed.
Yes, thanks, Che. Just to formally introduce my team, Che, I've got Mr. Polani Tukombela. Of course, myself, Chair, you know me, but for the benefit of the members, Soliso Hoa is my name. I'm the corporate executive. With me, I've got Mr. Polani Sikombela, who is our business executive, and he's going to be leading the presentation. But we brought the team that was involved and some key members of the team in the form of Sangeeta Kalin, who's the deputy business executive. We've got Nicholas Mukwena, who's the senior manager on the technical side. And we have one of our SM or senior manager in charge has left the organization. We now have a new senior manager responsible for the portfolio. His name is Kubas van der Merwe. And of course, we have our liaison manager for our parliament stakeholder in Marco Boy Griffith. Chair, we are going to go straight into the presentation. And I think just in the tone of COVID, we have also, you know, suffered the same fate as it's everyone else. We've lost some people and some even in this very portfolio that we are going to present, team members from this portfolio. And of course, on the audit side, Chair, the impact has been felt as well, delays in, you know, finalizing some of the audits, you know, challenges in getting information, auditing, you know, via, you know, electronic means. Obviously had its own challenges. So, but nevertheless, Chair, we have managed to complete most of the audits and on time. And now with this presentation, I can confirm that all the audits have now been completed. And without any further ado, Chair, I'm going to hand over to Polani to then take us through the, you know, the audit outcomes of the department, the public entities, as well as the government components, reporting to the Minister of Finance. Polani, over to you.
Thank you very much, Soli. And good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the Honorable members of the committee as well. The colleagues from Treasury, the Deputy Minister. Chair, I would like to share the presentation myself. I say the presentation has been shared, but if I can be given the rights to maybe to the coast, so that I can be able then to navigate from my side, I'll really appreciate that.
Hi, Polani, I just made you co-host. Should I just ask you?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Here we go. All right. Now, thank you very much. Good morning again. Today we're going to be presenting the audit outcomes of the portfolio of the National Treasury portfolio, meaning that it's the department, which is the National Treasury, as well as all the public entities that are reporting to National Treasury. I just want just to touch, I think, just to recap with the committee, Chair, in terms of our audit approach and also how we examine the audits in the public sector. We audit three areas, which is the financial statements, and we also audit performance information or the annual performance report, and also we audit compliance with legislation. So in this presentation, what we will say is that you will have outcomes in each and every one of these three areas. This slide, Chair, is basically providing the different type of opinions that you express as an audit office. You will see from the left where we've got the color that is green, where we express an unqualified audit opinion with no finding. That is the opinion that is desirable for the entities in the public sector. And this is what, as an audit office, we always work to ensure that we support the department and the entities to ensure that they get into that category. And then next to that category, we've got the entities where you'll see that color that is yellow, which means that the audit, the financial statements of these entities are unqualified, but there are some findings on compliance, there are some findings on document information. And then the color that is about purple, that's where then is those outcomes are undesirable, where you've got a qualified audit opinion, where you'll find that in the financial statements, the entities do not produce credible set of financial statements. And then next to that, we've got an adverse opinion. In the adverse opinion, that's where we find that there are many material issues or material errors in the financial statements, and also some areas of disagreements as well, where then we express a disclaimer of opinion, sorry, an adverse opinion. And then on the red category, that's where then we are expressing a disclaimer of opinion. And the reason why I'm explaining this, Chair, is the fact that we've got an entity here that has got a disclaimer, as well as an entity that has got a qualified opinion, and also a number of entities that are on the yellow category, which financially unqualified with findings, as well as unqualified with no findings. This is a very important slide because throughout this presentation, we've got these legends and also these colors that you see, Chair, where, you know, if you see a color that is green, that's where we said there are no issues. You know, we're happy. If it's yellow, it's unqualified with findings. Like the colors, you'll see the colors, they correlate to the opinions that I've just presented. And also then the movement as well, because we do the comparison from the prior years, whether there's an improvement, whether there's is unchanged, whether the outcomes have regressed. Chair, this is the portfolio. It has got 16 public entities, as well as the department, which is the Department of Treasury. What we've done is to classify them in terms of the subsectors. You know, we've got the regulatory agencies, we've got the government components, we've got the demonstrable banks, we've got insurance and investment entities, as well as revenue entities that are there. There is an entity that we are not auditing in the meantime, that is called SASRIA. SASRIA is basically classified as a Section 43 entity and is currently audited by the private firms, that one. Chair, that is the only entity that is not audited by the audit office. This is then, from this slide, this is when then I start to share the audit outcomes of the finance portfolio. And as you can see in the slide, Chairperson, that is in front of you, is that we have seen some improvement in the portfolio. You know, it will say that the number of audits that received an unqualified audit opinion with no findings has improved by 30% compared to the prior year. And those improvements is the result of three entities that have managed to honor their commitments to address the prior year findings that were identified in their reports in the prior year. Those entities being the Financial Intelligence Center, the FIRES Ombuds, as well as the Development Bank of Southern Africa. So we commend those entities by honoring those commitments. The audit outcomes of seven entities, which is Treasury, the PIC, SARS, the Land Bank, Life Insurance, the GPA, the Government Technical Advisory Center, as well as the FFC, they remain unchanged, or they remain in that yellow category, where they received an unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance and or on predetermined objectives. One critical issue, Chair, to elevate as well in this presentation is that the Land Bank has regressed from an unqualified audit opinion with findings in the prior year to a disclaimer of opinion And there are various reasons for that, Chair, because as it is publicly known, Land Bank has been struggling with liquidity challenges. So when they submitted the financial statements to us for audit, it was difficult for them to prove that they will be able to pay their debts as they fall due, meaning that they couldn't prove that they are a going concern. And there is a requirement in the accounting standards where they need to prepare their financial statements on a going concern basis. And as they have prepared those financial statements on a going concern basis, and also on our side as auditors, we couldn't satisfy ourselves that they are a going concern because of those liquidity challenges. So that was one of the basis for the disclaimer. And also there are some other significant findings that we've identified in terms of the management of the loan book, where we've seen that there are various internal control weaknesses and governance challenges that Land Bank is experiencing. Over the years, Land Bank has lost a lot of key management personnel, from its chief executive officer, chief financial officer, the chief risk officer. So there's a lot of there was a lot of exodus, if I can call it like that, as far as the key management personnel at Land Bank. And that created problems for them because they couldn't, go to the capital markets to raise funding. And also on the other side, the management of the loan book, there was poor management of the loan book. And I will actually provide more information as I go to the presentation as well. That issue. We also have a regression person on CBDA. CBDA has regressed also from an unqualified finding to a qualified audit opinion, and this because there's an expenditure that they where we could not find evidence that CBDA paid for the services that actually happened. So we had a limitation of scope there. And that resulted then in CBDA receiving a qualified audit opinion. We've got a Land Bank insurance company as well that has also regressed due to material findings that we've identified on the audit of predetermined objectives. And also we had some material findings on compliance with legislation. So this is this picture today is giving then the status of the portfolio itself in terms of then the status, how the portfolio looking as far as the audit outcome is concerned. As you can see, Chairperson, there is still some improvement. However, there's still a lot of work to be done by most of the entities in this portfolio. And this slide, Chairperson, is then focusing, on National Treasury, because we deemed it that, it will be important for us to elevate some key issues in our experience when we're auditing the National Treasury, the department. And Chairperson, as you have seen in the slide previously, that for the past 5 years, Treasury has been in the category of receiving unqualified audit opinion with findings on compliance with legislation and or predetermined objectives. One of the other challenges that Treasury is struggling with is the discipline of financial management, because the financial statements that they are submitting to us contain material misstatements. And as auditors, we have to identify those, pick up those misstatements so that management can be able to produce credible financial statements. So that is then the challenge that Treasury has had, I think, over the years, in terms of that financial discipline, in terms of ensuring them that they're producing credible financial statements. Another area that Treasury is struggling with is the issue of compliance, because we have been identifying over the years a lot of compliance findings, especially the issue, the failure to prevent irregular expenditure, failure to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure. We have also some findings that we've identified on procurement and contract management, especially also both of the department and also Treasury is also administering procurement on behalf of government. We call that those transversal contracts. And also those transversal contracts as well, we have identified that those tenders have got some material non-compliance issues that we identified them. Chairperson, National Treasury in the current year has incurred an irregular expenditure of 249 million as a result of the non-compliance issues that I've just mentioned above, and also have incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 56 million in the current year. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 66 million, Chairperson, is as a result of expenditure that National Treasury has incurred when on the purchase of licenses for the system that they are developing that is called the Integrated Financial Management System, or the IFMS. So what happened here, Chairperson, is that Treasury, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was in 2016-17, they bought the licenses. At the time, they had plans to actually utilize these licenses, I think, from August 2017. And as they wanted to pilot, I think, the system at that particular point in time. However, as you can see in this presentation, Chairperson, where this project, the implementation of this project has had some challenges, especially governance challenges, that we've been reporting over the years as well. And those governance challenges have resulted in delays in implementing this system. So these licenses then that Treasury has since procured that year, they had a 5-year contract with the service provider where they are paying about 67 million rands a year for those licenses. However, they are paying that 67 million rands a year. However, those licenses are not installed or are not being utilized. And then, hence, then they were classified as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This is also, Chairperson, an area that I think we received pushback from Treasury, because I think Treasury was believed that this is not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And also as an audit office, then we believed that it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But then there was a dispute resolution process that was followed, which eventually was finalized. As an audit office, we still maintained that this is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And as a result, I think we just signed the audit report of Treasury on the 31st of January this year, after following that dispute resolution process. There's a paragraph also here that specifies that the resources of the department are not utilized economically, and also that is contrary to Section 38(1) and also Section 45(b) of the PFMA that specifies that the resources of the department should be utilized economically. And also this talks to these licenses that are just also explained as well. You will see, Chairperson, there that to date Treasury has paid about 267 million rands already for these licenses, even though they are not utilizing this technical support and maintenance. We've also mentioned there, I think, some challenges on this IFMS program as well that Treasury is embarking on, which where we have found that there is no formal business case and program charter, and also there are project management challenges. There is poor project management, the insufficient resources and limited steering committee meetings relating to this program. And we think that this may result in failure to deliver the quality solution. And also the funds that are allocated for this program as well may not be utilized effectively. And this is a very big project, Chair, because this is a project that will ensure that government moves into an advanced computer information system. We are also elevating the issue of vacancies. I think in the department, there's various vacancies there in the level of the DDGs. I think the position of the accountant general, if I can specify, the position of the chief procurement officer, and some DDG roles as well, they are also vacant. And yes, they've been filled in an acting capacity. And we think that this is contributing to the control environment of the department. And we call for Treasury to fill these roles, because they are very critical for functioning of the department. Chair, if I may move to Land Bank, I think at Land Bank, Chairperson, as I have said, Land Bank has regressed compared to the prior years. They have now received a disclaimer of audit opinion, and this opinion, I've already explained the issue of the going concern challenge that they are experiencing because of the liquidity issues, as well as the material misstatements in the loan book, where when they are calculating the expected credit losses, there are some challenges that they experienced there, and also the valuation of the book as well. Land Bank as well has incurred a loss of about 2.4 billion rands in the current year, but you will see that you are stating that we've disclaimed the opinion of the financial statement, meaning that even though we are specifying that they've incurred that loss, we cannot rely on that loss because we have disclaimed the opinion of Land Bank. The financial statements also Land Bank that they have submitted to us contain the number of material misstatements, and these material misstatements also we identified them through our audit process. And you know, there's a weak control environment, I think, over the management of loans and advances. And the reason for that, Land Bank also has, I think I've already specified the issue of instability. I think, you know, the exodus of a lot of the executives at Land Bank. But also, there's also a weak control environment or governance challenges, because about 59% of the loan book is managed by intermediaries, or maybe by service level partners, as they call it, you know, which is a very big portion of their loan book. And most of these challenges and these weaknesses, they actually came from those intermediaries, where we could not rely on the data that was submitted by those service level partners. So we had some various findings there, you know, in terms of, for an example, the staging of the loans, because there is a standard IFRS 9 where it requires the entities, the banks like Land Bank, to, you know, to account for expected credit losses or impairments in its loan book. And then as part of that, then they need to stage loans in terms of the age, you know, in terms of then the age, and also to also have a system of collateral. You know, we've identified some findings where they could there's some discrepancies in terms of the management of collateral, management of the staging of the loan book, and also the credit model. Their credit model as well, we had some also challenges there with the historical data, and also the calibration of the model, and also the inconsistency of the accounting policies, because the SLAs were using different accounting policies than the Land Bank is utilizing. You know, so that caused a lot of challenges in the bank. And I think it's important, Chair, to mention that these challenges or these weaknesses that we've identified at Land Bank, we're not identifying them for the first time. I think over the past 3 years, we have been reporting these issues to management, and we've been requesting management to commit to address these issues. But I think as the time goes by, then they grew bigger and bigger and bigger to an extent that we disclaimed them this year. So it's very key that those particular issues are also addressed. And also, there were vacancies, I think, in the executive committee as well. But Land Bank has moved swiftly to fill most of those positions, like the position of the CEO, the CFO, the chief risk officer, you know, among others, have now been filled. But there are some positions, especially in the finance department, also that still needs to be filled, so that Land Bank has got has the capacity to execute its mandate. What is also important to say is that Land Bank has incurred a regular expenditure this year of about 769 million. This 769 million also include amounts for the prior years, because we have identified this year that these intermediaries or these service level partners, you know, they entered into them with these agreements with them, I think about 10 years ago, I think around about 2011, and they have been extending then these contracts, you know. And then there was an instruction note, then there's an instruction note from Treasury of 2016 that requires then entities or government agencies to request approval from Treasury to get for them to extend the contracts, of which then in this case Ledbank didn't get then that approval from National Treasury, hence then this expenditure then was classified as a regular expenditure. There is also fruitage and wasteful expenditure of about 16.5 million. This fruitage and wasteful expenditure is as a result of a penalty. They made an investment and then they withdrew that investment again. Then there was a penalty of 15.5 million and that resulted also in a fruitage and wasteful expenditure. If I may go then to the Public Investment Corporation, the PIC also is, it remains the same as in the prior year. It has unqualified its findings on compliance with legislation. However, I must mention that in the prior year, PIC had a challenge in the credibility of financial statements. They have since improved in that area because the financial statements that they submitted to us were free of material misstatements, which I think is something then that they need to be commented on. However, we have identified instances of non-compliance with their policies, guidelines, and procedures, especially relating to the assets under management that they are managing. We have identified significant findings where we see that there were instances where there was inadequate identification monitoring of politically exposed persons. You know, the PIC normally has got a register where they monitoring all the politically exposed people, especially on the deals, you know, in terms of who isn't the politically exposed person. So the register then that they have is not credible. There's credibility issues there. And also because in terms of their policy, as well as the Financial Intelligence Center Act, they also need to ensure that when the deal is coming, if then there are politically exposed people that are part of that deal, then they need to perform an enhanced due diligence. You know, we find some instances where that was not done. And in some cases, you've then post-investment, because you find that the deal, then PIC invest, but you find that post-investment, there are politically exposed people that joined these companies or these firms that PIC has joined in. There is a requirement also in their policy to also identify those people and perform an enhanced due diligence. And we've realized that PIC has not performed that. So that is an area that you've raised to the board as well to say that they need to actually look into and put some interventions there. There is also PIC as well, as part of this funding, also grant loans to the investing companies. And we've seen that as part of this credit risk management, PIC does not have an adequate collateral management system, you know, to ensure that when those loans or those investing companies are not able to pay, they can be able to easily call on the collateral that they have with the entity. So that is another issue, you know, significant issue that we've raised with them to say, please look into this thing, because I think they've got about 50 billion rands worth of loan book, you know, so that is a significant amount of our loans that they've granted. So it's very key then that they look into that particular issue. And also on the deals as well, you know, because they perform some due diligence also on the deals, you know, when we're auditing the deals, we've seen that in some cases, there was inadequate justifications of the assumptions that were used, you know, in the investment valuations. For an example, when they were using maybe a discount rate to value a company, you find that there were no justification or documented why they chose that particular discount rate or why they chose a certain multiple, you know, to value the companies. And this is a very big issue because this valuation of these companies is determined in terms of how much PIC uses to invest in these companies. And there's a risk that maybe they may pay a lot of money when they are investing, and subsequently these companies, you may find that they've impacted, the investment is impacted. So that is also another big issue. Chair, we've also have some findings also at PIC where there's non-compliance with supply chain management, where deviations, you know, were approved even though there was not emergency, and that also resulted in irregular expenditure as an entity. I think the key issue, you know, I think that we're highlighting as well is to is to ensure that TISA implement a robust investment process and also the enhanced monitoring, you know, its monitoring of compliance with legislation, especially when it comes to supply chain management. Here at the GPA, this is the Government Pension Administration Agency, also an entity as well that has been striving to improve its audit outcomes. It has also been sitting with unqualified findings on compliance and misinformation. Also, this entity is struggling on the procurement and contract management. And also, they are also struggling with consequence management. You know, this entity as well, this is also one of the big concerns that we have with it, because they've got a lot of compliance findings, you know, so they are not complying with compliance findings. And also even the issue of consequence management in terms of taking disciplinary action on those people that have transgressed the laws. One other issue is the instability also at GPA, you know, at the executive management level. Most of the positions there, including that of the chief executive officer, is filled on an acting capacity. So, and these acting roles, some of them have been acting for more than 12 months. So it is a challenge, you know, that I think it needs to be resolved for GPA. With the DBSA, the Development Bank of Southern Africa, this entity has improved its audit opinion from the prior year, where they had some material findings on compliance with legislation, especially relating to local content. DBSA has got a section that is called Infrastructure Development Division, or the IDD. That Infrastructure Development Division is basically delivering of building the infrastructure for government, and what they do also, they procure on behalf of these departments to when they are building the infrastructure. So we identified some findings there last year. But DBSA party has moved, I think, with speed to ensure then that they honor the commitments that they provided us last year. They've updated their supply chain management policy to be in line with National Treasury regulations, and also to ensure that they are compliant. So then, as a result, then they improve their audit opinion. And also, it is key also for us to highlight that DBSA, when it comes to the management of its loan book, it has got effective internal controls, and also it has got very strong governance and oversight over its credit risk management, as well as asset and liability management. It has got effective credit policies, and also they apply rigorous review and approval of credit and monitoring of the credit risk post-lending. So we have found them to be very, very sharp, you know, in terms of managing, I think, the loan book. It's very key on our side as well to highlight that the general risk profile of the loan book also is very concentrated, you know, in the sense that there are certain sectors that they are exposed to, like your energy sector. You know, they borrow a lot of money to the energy sector. They lend a lot of money to the energy sector and also municipalities. You know, so this concentration then of this loan book, I think it introduces a volatility, especially when it comes due to the expected credit loss or the impairment of its book. Because one little move in that sector that they are concentrated in, it impacts them quite substantially. I think the COVID-19 pandemic and also the ailing economy also has resulted in a 64% increase in its expected credit losses as well. And then, but we, you know, most of the loans, I think that they have, they remain in the medium risk category. And also the non-performing loans are sitting at a rate of 7.1% of the portfolio. Yeah, so this is basically then DBSA, and it's important to mention that I have seen that they've shown some resilience, you know, and have maintained positive results and also positive cash flows as well in the year under review. At South African Revenue Service, this entity chair, you know, also is an entity that also has remained unchanged from the prior year. It still has unqualified but with findings of compliance with legislation, where they are failing to prevent irregular expenditure as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So that is then another area that they are struggling with. And also the quality of submitted financial statements. I think we've identified this year that there were some findings on assets where there's a requirement for them to revise the, you know, the useful lives of assets you know, so we have some findings there where we find that there are some assets that we at zero book value, but they were still in use. However, we worked with them so that they can correct those misstatements in the financial statements. As a result, they got an unqualified opinion. We have not identified any findings on the customer's information. So at a high level, this is basically the high level overview of the portfolio in terms of how the portfolio is looking. From this slide, Jefferson, I'm just going to provide at a high level the data in terms of how things are looking in the portfolio. This slide just talks about the credible financial reporting. You will say that there is some regression on the quality of final submission of financial statements after audit, and this is attributed to the two entities that have received a disclaimer as well as a qualified audit, which is the Land Bank as well as CBDE. On the performance information, there are some improvements there in terms of the quality of annual performance reports that are submitted to us for review or for audit. So that one is something that is some positive there. And also on the non-compliance as well with legislation, we've seen that there is some improvement there. I think from 25% of entities with no findings to 44%. However, the 56% of entities with findings is still very high. So that needs to be worked on. You will see in the slide that we've actually elevated one of the top five non-compliance areas in the portfolio, which is the issue of credibility of financial statements, the issue of procurement and contract management, expenditure management, consequence management, as well as the PIC, the issue of assets under management. This slide, Chairperson, gives the status in terms of then the internal controls. How are the internal controls in the portfolio? How is it looking, you know? And we look at three categories: the leadership, how is the leadership, the financial and performance management, as well as governance issues. And you will see then that we'll put each entity in terms of where it is falling, this category it's falling to. And this is also then the assurance providers also that I would say from the first level of assurance to the second level of assurance. On the financial health, Jefferson, this slide, basically here we are elevating the challenges at Land Bank, and I've already talked about these challenges. So I'm not going to repeat myself, but the purpose of the slide is just to elevate in terms of what are these key issues or challenges that Land Bank is experiencing as far as liquidity issues. Also, you will say in this slide as well on asset and liability management as well, these are the subsidiaries of Land Bank as well, which is Land Bank Insurance Company, as well as Land Bank Life Insurance Company, that also have some financial challenges as well as far as the you know, their sustainability is concerned. This slide, Jefferson, is fruited and wasteful expenditure. The slide for fruited and wasteful expenditure, where we are comparing in terms of fruited, the movement in fruited and wasteful expenditure, you will say that in the portfolio, fruited and wasteful expenditure has increased from 82 million. This year, it's about 149 million rands. And the contributors here top contributors is Treasury, which has got that 56 million of fruits and wasteful expenditure, as well as Land Bank, that has got that 16.5 million. I've already talked about these particular issues. On the irregular expenditure front, you will see that the irregular expenditure has increased as well from 766 million to just over 1.3 billion rand. Also, the major contributor there is the Land Bank. You will see that at the Land Bank, we've got that 769 million. And it's just explained there that 454 million of that 769 million relates to the prior years also. National Treasury, I've already talked about National Treasury on the irregular expenditure. SARS as well has incurred about 331 million of the regular expenditure. And also there are some other entities as well that also have some irregular expenditure, you know, but I'm not going to go into detail there because the slide is relatively clear. Also on the supply chain management, I think I've talked a lot about the issue of supply chain management. And as you can see in the slide, most of the entities and most of the common findings in supply chain management is for these entities to take effective and appropriate steps to prevent irregular and wasteful expenditure. And also the issue on uncompetitive and unfair procurement practices. Well, those are the key issues that we find in this portfolio. And the root causes, Chairperson, we've identified three root causes. where we find that in some instances there's slow response by management to address the findings, you know, that we've identified in the prior years, even though we've seen some improvement here. But there is, that is one of the root causes that we've identified. I think the issue of instability of vacancies in key positions is one of the contributors as well in this for these audit outcomes, and also the issue of lack of consequences for poor performance as well as transgressions in the book. Chairperson, these are the recommendations that we are recommending to the committee, where I think the issue of filling of vacancies, especially at National Treasury, the TIPA, as well as the Land Bank, you know, we're requesting the committee to make a follow-up with those entities, and also a follow-up with the accounting officer of National Treasury, as well as the accounting authority in the portfolio, to ensure that the audit action plan are adequate and continuously monitored to address this the findings that we've identified. And also the issue of compliance with legislation, you know. You know, these entities and departments as well, they should ensure that they've got a system to ensure that this compliance is monitored, and also there's consequence management. We are also requesting the government to enhance its oversight over National Treasury to ensure that the compliance with the supply chain management, as well as the other internal control deficiencies, are addressed as well. I think we are also elevating the issue of the governance concerns on the ICMS program. That also needs to be monitored closely by the committee to ensure that the ICMS system is developed and implemented by government as well. And the land bank as well, I think we are also emphasizing that the committee should also enhance its oversight over land bank to ensure that the liquidity challenges are addressed, and also the audit action plan to address the disclaimer is also monitored and implemented effectively. So those are the recommendations that we're providing, we are recommending to the committee, Chair. Chair, I'm about to finish. I think, Chair, there is an issue of the expanded mandate of the Auditor General, where now the Auditor General can issue material irregularities, and this slide just talk about that issue. And we are still on the phasing in of this new concept of material irregularities. In the portfolio, which is National Treasury, there are two entities where we have actually phased this one in, the National Treasury as well as the DBSA. At the DBSA, we have not identified any material non-compliance there. However, at Treasury, we are still assessing that one. That part of the process is still not finalized, because we are still assessing the non-compliance areas that we've identified. Whether then there is, they will result in these material irregularities. But Chairperson, these are the outcomes of the portfolio, and we can take the questions, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sukua and Mr. Sokombela, on the presentation about the audit outcomes of National Treasury and its entities. Now we are moving to item three, discussions. Alan, you will assist in identifying members who would like to ask questions and make comments.
For now, Chair, there's no hand. Okay, there's the whip. For now, just
Noxie.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. sorry, Chair. Let me just join you in really appreciating the presentation that has been done by the AG's office, and really appreciate the frankness and the hard work that seems to have gone into the work that is now being presented to us. My first question, Chair, remember last year we could not, like other committees, present our BRRR report in the National Assembly, and one is interested to know from the AG's office, because the delay, it was reported, was around the unavailability of the audit opinion. If we can be presented formally in this meeting with a reason for that, so that we are able to take that up with Treasury. It's worrying the entities that have regressed are very, very worrying. And Land Bank, for example, with its liquidity challenges, if the presenters can come in for me and give some clarities on that, as well as what they term the land bank insurance, if we could be just clarified on those. Otherwise, we appreciate the entities that have improved, but we are worried about the lack of credit control in PIC chair, if I heard correctly, because there was massive losses in PIC in the previous financial year, and if we could get clarity on that, do we still have some gaps there in terms of risk management? Chair, the instability at ETCO level in DEPA, is this now addressed? Have we laid that to rest, or do we still have a continuation of the situation where there are still vacancies at that level? We do not want to be caught by surprise again in the next financial year. Lastly, Chair, for me on DBSA, you know, Chair, sometimes the audit results or the audit opinion in a particular entity is fine and improved, as is the case with DBSA. Yet, in our language, there is a concept of the meat under the stamp. So we would like to know about DBSA on the improvement from past years. What is the sustainability of the situation? Because we want to know where the missteps were so that they don't go back there again. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Whip. Over to you, Honorable Mawilete.
Thank you, Chen. I also want to take this time to appreciate and thank the AG about, you know, the saving work that they have done. We know this time of the pandemic, it was not really easy because they couldn't even go and visit physically to the entities. So they have really done well. But I just, you know, there is one common thing that keeps on coming. Last year we spoke about it, and it's there again, the unfilled of post. You know, I mean, if you haven't really filled the post, there's not going to be anyone who's going to take that work seriously if they are acting. And I'm just hoping that seriously the post must be filled. Because if you're not going to fill the post, who's going to do the work?
because already that other person has got their own work that they are doing. So 18 and 18 on post, really, we're not going to go anywhere. And for other, for the entities and for the outcomes of the entities and everyone, I think, you know, for the AG is to identify the problems. You have done that. It is for the entities to take, you know, those outcomes, those problems that have been identified, to really sit down and come up with a plan. We don't want, you know, next year when we come back here, you know, we still have the same and same problems. So for me, it's just, you know, a comment that everyone, and encourage everybody to take their work seriously, because if we're not going to do our work and take our work seriously, the community there and poverty is just going to escalate and escalate and continue. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mavilesa. For now, those are the two hands that I've recognized. Let's have the AG responding to the questions asked by the members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible because I can't seem to see the black screen for some reason on my side. Chair, I am going to start. Thank you. I think magic was done there, and now I can see the screen. Chair, I'm going to start, and my colleagues will join in terms of, you know, answering the questions raised by the honourable members. Let me start, Chair, with the National Treasury matter. Where Honourable Whip there was asking for the reason for the delay in the National Treasury, audit opinion, the issuance thereof. Chair, I can confirm that indeed we had a delay in terms of issuing that audit report. I think Mr. Scombella has confirmed that that report was only issued at the end of January. And the reason for that, Chair, was really an issue of a disagreement as it related to the matter of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure on the IFMS project. As a result of this particular disagreement, Chair, our procedures and policies require us to follow a dispute resolution process, and that's exactly what we did. And Chair, the dispute resolution process has got a number of legs, and hopefully we always hope that, you know, once the matter is elevated beyond just the audit team that was carrying out the audit and is given to, for example, another team within the AGSA who is independent, we always hope that, you know, the matter gets resolved at that stage. However, you know, even after that step, when that particular team of technical experts and legal experts from internally came to the conclusion that supported the view of the audit team, and National Treasury was still not satisfied, which then necessitated for the next step of the process, which was a joint briefing in terms of, you know, the legal opinion, because the matter was really a technical legal matter of interpretation. And of course, Chair, with the matter of, you know, the December holidays as well, that contributed, because then, you know, some processes had to be suspended into the new year, January, so that we can, you know, allow the break, the recess to take place. And hence, that process yielded again in favor of the Auditor General, and we were therefore able to sign off the report finally on the 31st. So, Chair, that is the answer for the National Treasury matter. I'm also just going to deal with the issue of, you know, vacancies. I fully agree that, you know, the vacancies, we are seeing that they are creating instability, and this instability is costing, you know, the entities and the department in this case, in terms of, you know, ensuring that there are proper processes and sustainable monitoring of, you know, governance and things like that. And then, as we have mentioned, In the department itself, there is a few positions that are in the acting role, which requires, you know, attention. We have seen in Land Bank that, you know, the vacancies have resulted in numerous challenges, which then eventually resulted in this, you know, situation where we had to disclaim the Land Bank. So those matters certainly, Chair, hence we are elevating to this committee for the committee to, you know, follow up and deal with the accounting officers so that they can follow up on these matters and make sure they are dealt with appropriately. Yes, Chair, I think the other comments about the matters we have reported, I fully agree with Honourable Mabilesa in that, you know, we more for most of the things we can report, but it's up to the management and the executive authority and accounting authorities to then take action in terms of the PFMA. So that is again another matter that we are putting as a for action plans to be followed up to resolve these issues. I'm going to hand over to my colleagues. I think perhaps Polani, you can come in and deal with other comments, and other colleagues can keep in as well.
Thank you very much, Soli, and through you, Chair. Honourable Weep, on the liquidity challenges at Land Bank, I think in simple terms, Land Bank does not have money to pay for its liabilities. You know, so that is the main issue. You know, and they have not been able to honor, you know, its commitment. So they have defaulted, I think, you know, in terms of paying the debts, because Land Bank, as a state-owned entity also, it raises funding in the capital markets, you know, through bonds, you know, among others. So there are institutional investors there that have given Land Bank a lot of money. They are sitting with over 40 billion rands of debt in its balance sheet. And I think all the challenges that Land Bank has experienced, especially because there's been, you know, the agricultural sector has been affected by many challenges, especially the drought, I think, in the sub-Saharan Africa as well. So then that also had an impact in terms of the cash flow, you know, for Land Bank to be able to pay. And also, normally Land Bank goes into the capital markets to get more money. But one of the other reasons that problem challenges that they had, because they didn't have executive management team, especially towards the end of 2019, you know, there was a lot of exodus at that time. And that was the time that they were supposed to go back to the market to get more funding. Then you will remember that beginning of 2020, I think there were lots of downgrades, you know, by the rating agencies of the, you know, of Land Bank as well. Also then that made it very difficult for Land Bank to raise funding so that it can be able then to execute its mandate. So that is then, I think that the challenge, there's liquidity challenges that we're talking about that Land Bank is experiencing. They are trying to address the situation now, you know, to actually ensure that they turn around the business, and also there is to ensure that there is turnaround. Perhaps when they are coming to this committee to present their annual report, maybe they can provide more information in terms of what steps they are taking. What does the term Land Bank Insurance mean? The Land Bank has got two subsidiaries, Chair. There's a subsidiary that is called Land Bank Life Insurance Company. That is a subsidiary that provides life insurance to the farmers that Land Bank is lending money to. And also then there is a Land Bank Insurance Company, also another subsidiary. That entity is providing insurance also to the farmers, like a short-term insurance, to the farmers as well. So those are the entities. And also these entities, if Land Bank is struggling, they are also struggling because they are in the same sector. You know, so that is why also you will say that you are highlighting that they also have some financial difficulties. The instability at JPA has not been addressed also because there is still many executive management roles that are acting, that are filled, the position are filled in an acting capacity. I think the chief executive officer as well, his contract came to an end in July 2020, if I'm not mistaken, and also that role is still not filled as well. So that is also another challenge that I think JPA has had. On the issue of DBSA, I think the outcomes of DBSA, I think DBSA is an entity that is an audit office we took back some 3 years ago, and is one of the few entities that we found them to be very to have very good systems, especially when it comes to the systems of internal controls. And also they've got a very good control environment. And also they are managing their book, I think their loan book, very well. You know, but I'm just, with your permission, Chair, going to ask permission from you to hand over to Sangeeta, and also hand over to Nicholas, and also Zembeni, who will talk on DBSA. And also the Public Investment Corporation in terms of the risk management of the Public Investment Corporation, and also the sustainability of this audit opinion of the audit opinion for the PPSA.
Thank you, Bonani. Thank you, Chairperson. So I'll talk a bit about DBSA and the sustainability of the clean audit. In the previous year, we did see them have a non-compliance around local content. Supply chain management, and that related to a division that assists education sector and health sector in terms of projects they run, construction projects specifically. So we found that they had not complied with the Treasury instruction note around local content and procuring with regards to local content. DBSA did then put in an action plan to address this matter, and we then see them come back to a clean audit. So they were in a clean audit status before the previous year. What makes it sustainable to an extent from that is, I want to reiterate what the Polani mentioned, was that in fact they do have good financial controls in place. They do manage their book, and they've got a robust credit modeling that's been implemented, as well as credit risk evaluations that they've implemented. DBSA also has strict controls around managing of the loan book in terms of specific sectors. So their strategy is very aligned with specific sectors and a mandate within the specific sectors. And I think that came with the cleanup over a couple of years, where they evaluated their strategy as to what they would want to get involved in terms of infrastructure. And they have been through a restructuring over the last 2.5-3 years, where they've realigned their businesses to not only concentrate on the geographic sectors, but to look at the specific sector and what they could then assist in terms of infrastructure and the products that they can offer in the specific sectors. So that's where we do see them somewhat align and adjust their mandate to it. And we see that working through into the financial reporting and into the performance reporting. And I think this realignment then has allowed them to be able to even put their best foot forward for the audit process and for us to substantiate and confirm the reporting that they've done. I think I could perhaps hand over to Zimbini if she'd like to add anything. And then Nicholas can talk about PIC. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sangeeta, and thank you so much, honorable members as well as Chair. I think to add on to what Sangeeta said is also one very, very big aspect of I think it's ensure sustainability is the willingness of management to take in the recommendations of the Auditor General and the respect that they actually provide or give into the audit process, as well as the audit committee as well. They've also, you can see how invested they are in ensuring the correct approach, especially when it comes to the relevant independent reporting that is done by the Auditor General. I'm not trying to blow our own horn, but I'm simply saying the management's attitude, as well as the audit committee's attitude in ensuring that the Auditor General's findings and issues are addressed and provided for timely is also what we've seen as an ability for then the entity to improve year on year. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. Yeah, regarding the question relating to PIC on the credit risk management, firstly, maybe let me just clarify that for PIC as a corporate, in terms of financial position, like their financial position itself, the concerns that we have were on the asset under management. Under management, where like as we mentioned, like they do have a loan book of just over 50 billion. Then the challenge that we had there was the credit risk management around that. For example, the collateral management. In a case where like the investee companies are unable to pay or they default, will the PAC be able to recall those collaterals? There were not adequate system to monitor that. I think that is our concern, which poses a risk in case there are losses, they won't be able to recover. And that's what we've added to management. And we through engagement with them, they've put measures in place to try to remedy the situation. And it's something that even the panel that has been appointed will be looking at it. And that is the response to that question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we done with the responses, Mr. Zuhua? So far, before I
check. Yes, Chair. Yes, Chair, we are done with the responses in terms of the questions that have been asked. However, we are happy to take more comments or questions if there are any, Chairperson.
Okay, thanks. Honorable Shibambu, over to you.
No, thanks, Chair. I thought that we perhaps need to be given a deeper detail with regards to these payment on the integrated financial management system, the FMS, because year on year it becomes an area of concern from the AG's office in terms of the National Treasurer seems to be taking an arrogant approach in terms of explaining this to the extent that it even delays the finalization of the audit process. So maybe we might be given a clearer and deeper context, and then we take a decision as the standing committee in terms of what should happen, so that we then deal with it differently, because it can't be National Treasury that is engaged in wasteful and fruitless expenditure, because under normal circumstances, National Treasury should be guiding all other departments and entities of the state on proper expenditure of resources. But if it is the one that is engaged in wrongful processes, it then gives a leeway in terms of what should happen. And I would think that the second issue that we have to deal with today is the issue of the PIC in terms of what should happen. I think there's outstanding issues which as the committee we must deal with, because there's been acting board there for a very long time like this. Acting board to use terms intended to act again, and there's no clarity of what happens. And I don't think that we are together with National Treasury in terms of our interpretation of the commission's outcome and recommendations. So we need to deal with that so that we're able to then give clearer guidance. You know that this the recommendation which we had put that the amendment bill which was passed by Parliament should be signed finally by the President, because it has been in his desk for more than 2 years, if not 3 years now. And there's no issues of the Constitution that are of concern from the President's side. So we need to deliberate on that so that there's clarity in terms of what happens. Particularly in relation to the PIC. But I think that, that maybe the AG should give us a clearer and deeper context of the IFMS process, and then we're able to take a solid decision of what should happen. And if National Treasury decides to defy or ignore what we say, it's okay. But I think all of us should be appraised properly of the history of this thing and why it continues to be an area of concern. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Shibambu. Honorable Lewis, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Nice to speak to you again and other honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity today and obviously to the Auditor General's Office, for which we have incredible respect. Let me say I have some questions for you and a comment. The first question is, do you think that it would be better for the corporate governance of the land bank if it were to operate like a real bank instead of just a bank in name only, and fall under the governance and regulatory regime of the South African Reserve Bank rather than just an entity of the Treasury? Because it does seem that the Reserve Bank's oversight of its charges, its banks, is much better and more close, and the scrutiny is more intense than the National Treasury, which has clearly failed to properly oversee and exercise its oversight responsibility and careful management of the land bank. That's notwithstanding the failures inside the land bank, which you have very neatly summarized today, but I do believe that could be corrected by transferring the land bank into making it a real bank under the auspices of the Reserve Bank. And I'd like to get your views on that. Then this is more probably a question to you, Chairman. We've heard some disturbing things today from the annual report regarding the PIC. And what is most disturbing is that the PIC has visited us twice now in this committee, the new chairman and the new management, to say that they have instituted vast improvements and overhauls of their corporate governance procedures. And yet we hear today, for example, that they are not doing basic checks on politically exposed people involved in deal making. They are using discount values that they cannot justify, which means that they're just a thumbsuck. All of these are exactly the same things that were leading to the scandals which led to the Impati Commission and which led to the change in management. And this is very concerning and dangerous. So what I'd really like to do is get a formal response in this committee via an engagement time with the PIC management and board, again, Chairman, and I think that's very, very important. Then I've criticized the National Treasury on the land bank. My final question, or rather comment, to the Auditor General is to say, actually, I have a lot of sympathy for the argument that the software licensing contract is not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Because if you enter into expenditure in good faith and proceed in a procedurally correct manner, and then after the time that you've incurred that expenditure, you have some change in circumstances which renders that expenditure kind of obsolete, then, you know, surely the job is to test the intent and procedure at the time of the expenditure, not what happened thereafter. I repeat what I said, I have absolutely the utmost respect, but I do actually see the counter-argument in this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lewis. Over to Auditor General able to respond to those questions.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to start, and then again I'll hand over to my colleagues. Starting with the comments and questions by Honourable Shebambu, we can certainly provide the details in terms of the IFMS expenditure check. In the main, we are talking about, you know, a contract that was entered into in 2016-17 for licenses. And I'm going to ask my colleagues here to provide the exact numbers, but I'm just going to give the skeleton so that there is a clear understanding of the matter. The contract was broken down into the cost of licenses as well as the cost of maintenance and support. The cost of license was an upfront payment in the 2016-17 year, and the license and support is an annualized payment, which is about 69 million in total, and that is to be paid every year for the next 5 years from that point onwards. So in fact, the last year of that particular contract is going to be March, April of this year. And after which then there has to be, going back to the table between National Treasury and Oracle in terms of the future commitments and contracts beyond that point. But let me also just ask Polani, I think Polani will be best suited here to share a little bit on the history, so that, you know, the members have got an appreciation of what we are dealing with in terms of IFMS, and also some of the numbers that are applicable. Okay.
No, thank you very much, Soli, and through your chairperson. Maybe if I may provide some brief background, I'll try to be brief here. I think National Treasury, let me say government, have been trying to replace the legacy systems that they have to manage its finances. I think from about 2005 or so, if I'm not mistaken. And there's been a lot of money then that has been allocated for that. I think it's about it's a couple of billion, about 4 billion at the time, that was allocated for government then to have the system. And at the time, CETA was the one that was identified, I think, as a system integrator or as an entity that should be implementing or developing this system. There was an approach at the time for the system to be developed, to be an internally developed system. However, there were a lot of challenges with this, with the development of this system. And also, the issue of project management, the capacity challenges at CETA, project management issues, and also, then I think at about 2013-14 or so, then I think there was the cabinet decision at the time for the change. I think there was some studies that were done, you know, by various agencies like World Bank and other professional services firm, where then it was assessed that the approach that was used, you know, at the time for the IFMS project, it needs to be changed, because there are a lot of things in terms of also to develop a system internally also is not easy, you know, and bespoke it. Then there was a proposed change then, I think by cabinet in 2013 or so, where then it was recommended that a commercial off-the-shelf system should be should be the one then that government should get, as opposed to develop it internally. Then that system can be bespoke, you know, in terms of there are maybe certain modules that can be bespoke. And then Treasury had to, abandon those plans, you know. And they've spent a sizable amount of money at that time as well, you know, because there were some systems as well. I think they managed to get a module, so, you know, a supply chain management module on that IFMS-1. That is called IFMS-1. Then they had to stop it. Then they had then to embark on the new changed approach now, that is IFMS-2. Then from 2015-16, then that's when then Treasury then was then the one then that took the lead, you know, in terms of ensuring then that they've got a project management office, they are capacitating that office, and also they are managing then the project themselves. Previously on IFMS-1, Treasury was just a sponsor in terms of allocating funding and resources, and also the owner then of the financial management system, as well as the asset management systems. I think DBSA as the owner then of the HR module at the time. But now on IFMS-2, then the project management office was then established at National Treasury to ensure that there is a project management office there. So as part then of this project, Treasury then had to, you know, have its own business case in terms of how then this needs to be done, a program charter, in terms of then the plan, you know, what was the plan that they would have. And also, as part of then this program charter, they were planning to have this commercial off-the-shelf system in the space of 5 years, meaning that from 2016-17 financial year, they wanted to start at that time, and then by April 2021, which is this year, they wanted to have finalized procuring that system and having that system, and also to roll it out to government as well. So what happened then, as part of those plans, then they procured licenses, you know, I think about more than 1 million licenses or so, you know, and at the time they had plans to test this system in some in the pilot site. They had some pilot sites as well that they wanted to test the system, you know. So in 2016-17 financial year, when we were auditing then in that particular year, we questioned the decision by Treasury to buy the licenses in 2016 already and pay for these licenses, but they were planning these licenses to be installed and utilized in August 2017. So that was then the initial challenge or issue or finding that we had at the time with Treasury, to say, why buy licenses in 2016 and pay for them in 2016, but your plan, your program charter was saying, you're going to have a pilot site. You're going to start needing these licenses in August 2017. Then we took then this finding through our own processes in terms of what constitutes fruitless wasteful expenditure, looked at it, and we arrived at a decision that what Treasury paid in 2016-17, remember 2016-17 start in April 2016 and end in March 2017. So yeah, in March 2017, but they were planning to have pilot sites in August 2017, which is the 2017-18 financial year. So that was then fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But what we said to Treasury, we will evaluate this expenditure because these licenses, they entered into a 5-year contract with their supplier to say, in a 5-year contract, we enter into a 5-year contract for you as a supplier to provide maintenance and technical support to the users of the system. But then this maintenance and technical support in the 2016-17, it was not utilized at all, because even in this program charter, there were no plans in 2016-17 financial year to install the software, you know, for the software to be utilized. So that's when then we said, for this year, it's put as a wasteful expenditure, but for the coming years, we're not just going to default that it's put as a wasteful expenditure. We're going to look then at your project plan, project management plan, whether you have implemented your milestones and whether you've actually installed this software and is being utilized. So then 2017-18, we also did the same thing. There were various engagements that we had also with Treasury you know, where we also looked in terms of are there any people that are using the system, and through use of our experts as well in systems as well, we realized that the software is not being utilized. Then also 2016-17 was classified also as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 2017-18, I'm sorry. And in the audit report of Treasury, we have been reporting these challenges, because the challenges that we've been having as well is that even though Treasury has went to procure the licenses and other things, the business case also that we received, it was not approved. It was not a final business case. And also there were some challenges in terms of the steering committee meeting for that project as well, where that steering committee meeting was not meeting on a regular basis. And also the milestones as well were not being met by Treasury. So we've been reporting, if you can look at our reports from the 2017-18 financial year, we've elevated these issues of the ICMS to say there should be an action. This system needs to be implemented. Then it's to be monitoring on the system. So 2016-17-18, also then this is there were delays as well in 2016-17-18. Then we assessed that expenditure, because they pay about 67 million each year on for this digital mechanism support. We assessed it. We realized that there was no value that Treasury has derived, even though they've paid for this service. It was fruitless and wasteful. 18-19, and then this year, then which is 2019-20. I think what is important also that I should mention here is that during 2016-17, Treasury also never agreed to this expenditure. They raised a dispute as well that year, which also was taken through our processes and our channels as well, where there were independent reviews, and those reviews also arrived at the same conclusion as the audit team, that expenditure is fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because there is no value that is being derived, and it has been incurred in vain, and it's in vain. So that is the main issue. Then during 2019-20 financial year, again, Treasury also raised the dispute again. I think Soli has explained in terms of how they will dealt with the dispute. But I think if I can just give a high level, this is basically then how this ICMS project has come about. The Director General also has instituted an investigation on this ICMS. Also, in I think there was a report that was released in 2018 financial year. I think in May 2018, if I'm not mistaken, there were some findings also on that forensic investigation report. And that forensic investigation report, by the way, also arrived at the same conclusion that this expenditure is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. You know, but the report didn't only cover this technical support and maintenance. It also covers other elements in this ICMS project, in terms of the ICMS project that is being there. And also there were some recommendations there in terms of consequence management. And that is what National Treasury is still working on as well now, to actually ensure then that they are implementing the recommendations of that forensic report on ICMS. So that is all I can, you know, I'm hoping that I was clear in terms of the history. I tried to summarize in terms of then the history of this particular issue of this ICMS. A lot of money has been spent on ICMS, but there is no system, you know. So that is our concern as the audit office, to say there's a lot of money, hundreds of millions that are being spent, but there is no system that you know, that is in place, you know. So that is the key issue, you know, that that we are having. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Sokobela, for the response. I see Honorable Shibambu wants to make a follow-up.
Yeah, can we begin the exact figures of just how much thus far has been spent on this IFMS system, which is not working, and is currently appearing as fruitless expenditure in all the financial statements and audit outcomes of National Treasury? How much, like since the beginning, how much have we spent thus far on a useless system?
Can't we approach it like this, Honorable Bushbamba and colleagues, that we create space and time for National Treasury to come and appear before SCOF to give us a full briefing on the IFMS and, if possible, the Office of the Auditor General should also be in attendance. And in the same meeting, I think we should also get a full briefing on the land bank, because the audit report raises a flag on these two departments, not on this one, two auditees, that is the department and the land bank, and they are recommending that the SCOF should actually enhance its oversight. So in enhancing our oversight, why don't we make follow-up on issues that they are raising prominently? And the issues that the Auditor General is raising is the IFMS and the land bank. So if we can find space and time and create enough time to get a full briefing on the IFMS and the land bank, I think it will suffice. But I'm not suppressing the debate or the comments now. I was trying to look at the way forward. Let me take Honorable Mlolong, and then there's another one, Alan, with Zimbini. Who's Zimbini?
Hi, Chair. I wanted to respond to the way Honorable Member asked about the Land Bank and the Prudential Authority or the South African Reserve Bank providing more corporate governance on the Land Bank. Chair, I wanted to respond to that.
You can go ahead, and then Honorable Mlolong will come
back. Okay.
I thought it's a member of the Parliament.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to respond. I do indeed believe that, yes, it could add a little bit more scrutiny or bring the Prudential Authority closer, which is the leg that sort of monitors the conduct of banks in South Africa, and will also then make the land bank be comply with the Banks Act as well as the Financial Sector Regulations Act. But I want to add that in as much as currently the land bank is as it is or reports is not a commercial bank, there are a number of applicable financial regulation acts that it complies with, such as the FIRE Act, the FICA Act, the NCA Act, the JSE desk listing requirements, due to the fact that it has listed it on the JSE. And the JSE does monitor those on an ad hoc basis. Part of the regulations of the Bank Act is with regards to the capital adequacy or the solvency of a bank. And the land bank actually does voluntarily determine those applicable ratios, Basel ratios that are required by the Banks Act, such as the liquidity capital ratio, which literally monitors the liquidity of the bank as at the point, as well as the capital adequacy ratio, which also monitors whether the bank has adequate capital at a point. And you'd find and the cost-to-income ratios as well as the non-performing loans ratios. Those are very key important ratios that the bank voluntarily discloses discloses in their financial statements. And these are also, you'd find that when they go and procure funding in the external market, those are one of the covenants or the contractual covenants that they need to adhere to in order for them to be competitive, especially where there are international institutional investors involved, such as your KfW Development Bank and so forth. So definitely the land, it would definitely bring in more scrutiny in the sense that then the land bank will be now complied to submit those economical returns to the Prudential Authority on an annual basis. But as it stands, they are doing those voluntarily, as also contractually, as they are obligated, either due to their various funding agreements. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that comfort, Honorable Ellen. But as Upolani had unpacked in terms of what transpired with the land bank, is obviously influenced greatly with the instability that was there in terms of the executive management, as well as the drought that really hit the land bank for a period of a good 3 to 4 years, where it was the farming community was unable to produce the much needed capital that they used in turn to then service the loans of the land bank. And obviously, again, as we articulated, the various then internal control deficiencies that were also identified that also led to then the liquidity issues that the bank has then. And we welcome, Chair, the area where we can then, let me not speak for my bosses, though, where we can give a full briefing in terms of, or articulate well what we identified as an audit office into the business of the land bank. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Mbini. Honorable Mrolo.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning and Happy New Year. I am also going to concur with your proposal. In fact, I was going to concretely suggest that we need to set aside a session where we would get a report from National Treasury. And I want to suggest that the Auditor General should also, as you've progressively suggested, be part of that engagement, where we will talk about strategic and operational matters that relate to the land bank. But I'm also going to suggest, Chair, that consistent with your suggestion, that a report on IFMS must also be presented to the next to that similar session. And I'm going to suggest that the head of ICT would then have to present a roadmap on how this project will be concluded. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Honorable Mrolo, and also for seconding my proposal. So, Alan, we'll look at the program and see as to when can we find space and time for National Treasury and the land bank to come and make presentations. So we'll look for that in our program. I think we are done with the item on the questions and comments to such that we can move to the next item. Thanks very much, Mr. Zuhua, and your capable team, and for the work you have done so far. I hope next time we'll not have a situation whereby Parliament cannot proceed with its program in regard to BRRR because we are waiting for an ODT where there are issues that we don't understand why you can't go ahead and issue an audit outcome. We are far behind in regards to the BRRR of National Treasury to such that it has got an impact even on the minister tabling the budget later this month, while the BRRR
of that department hasn't been adopted. But I hope we'll do something about that. So I'm making a plea that Honor Mr. Suwa and Mr. Tondo Mohajan, the DG, next time you should handle matters of this nature properly and within the stipulated time. Because it's a problem when the lead department, which is responsible for fiscal discipline, does not lead by example. Other departments will take a cue, and when you raise issues, they will say that, but why didn't you do that with the national treasurer? And the whole system is going to collapse and create problems. So I hope Deputy Minister, a matter of this nature will not recur. Try to resolve your issues with the Auditor General in time, because it also gives an impression that departments don't respect institutions that are supporting democracy, even if it is not so, because those institutions have been created for certain reasons, and they should be seen to be taking decisions independently without any pressure. I raise this because I've received letters from the chairperson of chairperson, Mr. Froelich, worried that our committee is not progressing as it's supposed to in terms of BRRR, and I had to explain to him what's happening. So thanks very much, Auditor General team. You are welcome to attend the next item, because I think the Auditor General's report will be part of the annual report. So you can stay put and be part of the next item. The item now is briefing by the National Treasury on the annual report. Deputy Minister, over to you and the DG.
No, thanks, Chair of the Committee, Honorable Joe Masangani, and Parliamentary Committee members, Solis Ohoa, and your team, if you're still here, and parliamentary staff. We really want to thank you for this opportunity to account on our performance for the financial year 2019-2020, and also to give us this opportunity to share with you how we intend to deal with the weaknesses as identified by the AG. And as one of the anti-colonial revolutionaries, Amica Cabral's injunction once said that we must wage the struggle against our weaknesses, and this is an opportunity for us to receive critical feedback on our weaknesses and strengths. And Chair, we'll also ensure that the delay in tabling and finalizing our financial statements will not recur. We really want to apologize for that. There were certain reasons which I would not want to repeat, because that may come across as rationalization of not what we should not have done. And I also agree with you that the last year was a very difficult year in many respects. We've lost friends, families, colleagues, and fellow South Africans to the COVID-19. And as a national executive and cabinet of South Africa, we've also lost one of our members, Jackson Mthembu, the former minister in the presidency. And COVID has made a lot of things difficult, and it's even difficult to predict anything, to also know what is going to happen this year, and what are the impact of this COVID on the economy. We will make predictions And the minister, the next 2 weeks, will be presenting a budget, also to lay out our fiscal situation and what we should be doing in dealing with our economy, including our fiscal situation. Chair, I think AG is a very important institution in deepening our democracy. It's an important institution to enable South Africans to hold us accountable on how we utilize public funds and how we are performing on what we committed ourselves to do. An audit across both public and the private sector also enhances clean governance, thus enhancing investment. Investment is critical for economic growth, and investors will always want to know whether the economy, their money, is safe in both private and public institutions. And audit outcomes also enhance the ability of the state to raise capital in order for them to invest. Land Bank, for instance, find it difficult to raise money in the market because its financial statements are in shambles. And I agree with you, Chair, that we need to come back on the Land Bank for us to present what's actually going on there, including the board and the management, insofar as the challenges and the turnaround plans with regard to the Land Bank. The department, that is the National Treasury, we've achieved 83% of our annual target. But as AG stated, there are areas that require urgent attention. These areas range from transversal contracts, the IFMS. And again, I want to agree with you that we need to come back to you as the representatives of South Africans to account to you on the IFMS in particular. We also note the issue of the vacancies identified by the AG, and I think Honorable Mabitsela also commented on it. We've already filled the DDG position for Assets and Liability, the Budget Office. We've had interviews for the office of the Chief Procurement Officer, the DDG post. Unfortunately, we could not get a candidate, and we are working hard to make sure that all those vacancies at that senior level are occupied. And with regard to GPAR, and it's a point that was raised by Honorable Abrams, we have advertised for the senior positions so that that institution as well is stabilized. But institutional stability does generate confidence in the state and in our ability to manage and not only finances but other aspects that society has delegated us to manage. The department has spent 97% of its appropriated budget. And again, as the AG indicated, we indeed have had irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, particularly on the IFMS. And also again here, I want to agree with your approach, Chair. As I said earlier, that we need to come back to you in giving an update on what's actually going on here. With this introductory remarks, Chair, I want to hand over to the DG and the team from National Treasury to present the annual report for 2019-2020. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks, DM, Dr. Masondo. Over to you, DG.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, committee members and colleagues from the AG. And thank you for the opportunity to present the National Treasury annual report for the period 1920 to you. Given that the annual performance report has already been presented, Chair, to the committee in October of 2020, will then focus this presentation on the 1920 financial performance report. The annual report reflects the department's performance in the final year of the National Treasury's five-year strategy, that 2014 to 2019, which has been extended by a year to align the department's planning with that of the electoral cycle. This performance delivers on the mandate of the department guided by NTA's vision and mission and records the contribution made towards outcomes which have since been aligned to the sixth administration with NT contributing towards priority number one, number three, number five, number six, and number seven. On to the next slide, Chair. The 1920 financial year was an unprecedented year, as the Deputy Minister said. It was a year of challenges and changes and courage. And this year saw the end of the fifth administration in ushering the sixth administration. This gave all South Africans an opportunity to participate in the democratic process and gave the public service an opportunity to review past performance and recommending and recommitting to service delivery imperatives into the future. South Africa's long-term economic challenges persisted, further amplified by the devastating onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. By the end of the financial year, to tackle a health emergency through containment measures, a great expense to economies of global sudden stop was implemented, from which South Africa was not spared. This unique crisis called for a unique response, and South Africans with courage and conviction ended the reporting year under lockdown level 5, knowing the devastating impact this was having on our economy, but convinced that the well-being of all South Africans must be priority. This disruptive year, Chair, resulted in social partners working closely together to strengthen our national capacity and build on our collective experience to quickly address emerging needs during the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. It is envisioned that in national interest, the collective effort will be adapted and deployed to attend to persistent and emerging challenges, especially in our endeavors to be responsive for and responding to a growth economy, apply measures to maintain the fiscal framework and tackle structural constraints that are facing us, and restore investor confidence and public trust, reduce policy uncertainty, and lower the cost of doing business. Globally, the world output grew by 2.8% in 2019 compared to 3.5% in 2018. The outbreak of the pandemic drove almost all economies to contract, resulting in IMF projecting an annual contraction of minus 4.4% for world output in 2020. Global output is expected to recover in 2021 on the back of a better than expected economic recovery, largely led by the developed economies in China. However, Chair, these challenges remain, and these crucially depend on a certain evolution of the pandemic. Domestically, our economy stubbornly refuses to grow at a level required to meaningfully address our persistent and debilitating challenges of large-scale poverty, inequality, and unemployment. This trend, as you can see, is evident in a 0.2% growth rate for 1920 compared to the previous year of 0.06%. The financial, real estate, and business services, as well as general government services, showed a small but positive growth. However, this was not enough to drive material economic growth in 1920 financial year. Sectors such as manufacturing, mining and transport, storage and communication sectors were mainly negatively impacted on by load shedding, lower demand, persistent low business confidence, and weak investment. The struggling economy accompanied by weak domestic growth has had an adverse effect on South Africa's fiscal position. The budget deficit has come in at 6.7%, higher than the forecast of 6.5%. Challenges arising from delays in effecting the economic reform agenda and the vulnerability of key state-owned companies remain a significant fiscal risk to the country's fiscal position. The contraction in public finances continues to exert pressure on government's ability to balance the need for public services with constraints in public resources. This requires and will continue to demand prioritization of public service delivery, strengthening of responsive public administration, reduction in the cost of public service, and value for money program decision making. While which remains to be done, progress is being made in many areas. Cabinet embraced the path laid in our document towards an economic strategy for South Africa, which outlines 9 basic and fundamental pillars required to get the economy going again. These informed and re-emphasized in President Ramaphosa's recent economic reconstruction and recovery plan, and which will be driven by Operation Vulindlela and must be placed on the top of our reform agenda. For the Treasury in particular, Chair, we have resolutely continued to deliver on our highest responsibility of ensuring fiscal sustainability met with the priorities set by government while adhering to expenditure control. Transparency continues to be a priority for National Treasury, envisioned by achieving joint first in the world alongside New Zealand in the Open Budget Survey Index. Efficient and effective use of scarce public resources by spending agents has been supported through stringent monitoring. Fiscal relations between national, provincial, and local spheres of government were coordinated, encouraging sound budgetary planning at the provincial and local spheres of government, and capacity was built towards good public finance management practices. The National Treasury has redoubled its efforts to stabilize state-owned companies, exerting oversight to better enable these institutions to contribute to government developmental objectives in a financially and fiscally sustainable manner. Public debt and growing fund and public debt and funding of government, government borrowing requirements as well as cash resources were optimally managed. Tax amendments aimed at raising an additional $15 billion in tax revenues to support fiscal sustainability were implemented. Implementation of the Financial Sector Regulation Act continues to build on measures to transform the financial sector, and we have to do more in that regard. Relevant economic research and analysis that informed economic policy and frameworks was conducted, and quarterly economic and revenue forecasts were produced as expected in our annual performance plans. The National Treasury amplified and reinforced our commitment to advancing ethical behavior and leadership in public finance management through various monetary mechanisms, investigative processes, and capacity building initiatives across all spheres and entities in government, giving effect to the PFMA and the MFMA. Strategic procurement was also developed and implemented with a draft public procurement bill published for comment. A further 19 instructions were issued in line with policy interventions and proposed designated priorities for enhanced of supply chain management policies. The National Treasury continues to work tirelessly to build partnerships and diligently maintain stakeholder relations to optimize the impact results in change agent programs such as the Jobs Fund, the Municipal Finance Improvement Program, and the City Support Program. Now, Chair, before I hand over with your permission to Laura, in terms of taking us through some of the annual performance report, that is, the details of some of the issues that are listed in our report, I will just want to maybe respond to one or two things, and I'll come back to the same issues later on, Chair. As the Deputy Minister said, firstly, Chair, we welcome what the direction and the guidance that we're receiving from this committee today in terms of us to show leadership and for us to lead by example where matters requires us as such. And we have to lead the way. I think, Chair, you did say it, and Honorable Shivambo and other members did say that we have to lead the way in ensuring that there's good financial management, in ensuring that we can account in a way that we have to in all of the expenditures that we incur. The IFMS in particular is an issue that is at hand, and the committee today, indicated a few concerns and comments. And Chair, we welcome the opportunity to explain, the opportunity to respond to some of the AG's comments, and also to put proper perspectives to the program from its inception, from the beginning to date, in terms of how
this program performed and the realities. Because as you can note, I don't know if the committee members are aware that the fifth administration, even at the level of SCOPA, delved in too much detail, but we then will be ready and prepared to go through the genesis of this program to date in terms of where we. So we welcome that engagement, and we will be ready at the time when Chair, you'll be ready as a committee to engage with us on this important project that we're embarking on right now. So I will hand over to Laura, who is the acting head of my office and also the chief director responsible for strategic planning and monitoring and evaluation at the Treasury. She'll provide us with a summary of the annual performance plans that have been previously presented to the committee and also highlight some of the key issues around matters relating to fruitless and wasteful expenditure and also matters referring to the irregular expenditure as outlined in the audit committee report. AG's report. Thank you very much. So with your permission, I will ask Laura to take us through some of the slides that are critical for the whole committee to understand our performance under the period under review. Thank you very much.
Thanks, DG. Laura can go ahead and make a presentation.
Thank you so much, Chair and the DG. If I could start just to give an indication of the quarter-on-quarter comparison of the achievements of National Treasury in terms of performance. As you can see from quarter one, the key indicator for us is indicators achieved. And in quarter one, as we had previously reported in terms of our ongoing reporting to the committee, we achieved 88.61% of our indicators. There was an increase in our achievement in quarter two, and unfortunately, we had a drop in quarter three. We often find that there is a drop for us in quarter three, given that we have a number of programs that are annual programs that have their performance measured in quarter three. And you will see that we then lift our performance again in quarter four with our mitigation programs, interventions to ensure that we address underperformance. Taking effect in quarter four. Our final annual performance, we achieved 83%. As previously agreed with the committee, whilst National Treasury does track the achieved, partially achieved, and not achieved, because we are enhancing our monitoring and evaluation ecosystem to be able to, at a chief directorate level, track performance against actual expenditure. And therefore, it's important for us to be able to still monitor partially achieved indicators and not achieved. But because our APP is an annual planning instrument, our annual performance is evaluated as achieved or not achieved, which is a combined partially achieved and not achieved. So for the annual performance of 2019-20, National Treasury achieved 83.33% of our indicators, and we did not achieve 16.67%. In terms of number of actual indicators, this means across our programs, we achieved 100 of our key strategic indicators, we partially achieved 15, and we did not achieve 5. As previously we had indicated to the committee, we do provide information to the committee on each of the divisions of National Treasury, given that unlike most departments, National Treasury does not have a one-on-one relationship between programs and divisions. So we have a number of divisions that are then reported under a single program. But given the vast, diverse work that National Treasury does, it is important we believe to give the committee, in the interest of transparency, the actual performance of each of these divisions so that you can see where in the different work areas we have performed and not performed. But in terms of total, I do want to indicate to the committee, for program one, which is our administration program, we achieved 66%. For program two, we achieved 91%, and I'll go into the detail, although as indicated by the DG, I will just highlight key strategic areas because the committee has been, we have presented previously to the committee. in October on our annual performance report. For Program 2, which includes the Budget Office, which includes a tax and economic policy, we achieved a 91%, and then I'll go forward from there. In terms of auditing of our predetermined objectives, given the paring down of the AG's work over this year and its exceptional circumstances, only Program 4 was audited, which is Assets and Liability Management. Whilst the AG did not identify any material findings on the usefulness and reliability of our report, unfortunately, we did have to do an adjustment of material misstatements on two indicators, and that is because a formula error embedded itself into the quarterly reporting and then carried itself across into the annual report. This error was picked up and has since been, not only was the error rectified, but we have since inputted key controls into our formulas so that at the quarter four, we are able to run a test on the formulas to ensure that we have not picked up errors across the quarter, which then interprets itself into our final annual performance report. If I can just quickly go through each program, and as you said, the committee knows these figures, but Program 1 achieved 66.67%. I just want to indicate to the committee that part of the work we do is we monitor the APR, we monitor the indicators that we have to report to in terms of clusters. We monitor each of the divisions as well as each of the chief directorates, and then based on the findings of the AG, we monitor the performance risks that have been identified as well as the audit findings. And in terms of the audit findings, the DG has set up a special committee that is made up of senior treasury officials that specifically require the DDGs who have to take personal responsibility for addressing audit findings year on year. And they are required to report to this committee. The committee then reports equally to MANCO, which is our management committee, but as well as to the DG. Also for the committee, we have a control in place around audit findings where it is included in the performance reporting and evaluation for our DG. Also in Program 1, one of the two areas that we are specifically doing an intervention on, and this intervention started last year, and the AG recognized that there was progress, importantly on supply chain management. So in the management report and in the engagements with the AG, there was a recognition that there has been progress on National Treasury supply chain management. However, there is work still to be done. And to this, I want to indicate to the committee that we are applying we're continuing with our special intervention, and that intervention will now redo the gap analysis to see where we've progressed on our original interventions and to see where the challenges are that we still need to address around the capacity in our supply chain management units, the technical expertise, the processes, and the procedures, and then we will introduce further controls to add to those that we had previously explained. For Program 2, this is economic policy and tax, we achieved 91% of our indicators. Importantly, to emphasize to the committee is that 50 papers were published on key economic matters, and this is done in partnership with the SA TIDES program. A number of economic models were maintained, as well as importantly and key to the work of National Treasury, four economic forecasts were developed. In terms of Program 3, we achieved 85% of our indicators. In Program 3 is located our key budget work, which is therefore the divisions of the Budget Office, IGR, which is Intergovernmental Relations, as well as Public Finance. Now, key to this work area, as I've discussed previously with the committee, is that a number of these indicators are not completely in the control of National Treasury. They are process indicators, and if we do not receive the inputs from other government departments, provinces or municipalities, then it is picked up by our monitoring as an underachieved. And the reason why we monitor these indicators, even though they're not wholly in Treasury's responsibility, is because it's key work that Treasury does. Whether it is responding to departmental requests for approvals, whether it's the IYM feedbacks, or whether it is our municipal reports on our monitoring. This is key mandate for National Treasury, and we will continue to monitor it. Equally, we monitor in terms of process indicators the response of the divisions when we have not received the input information. And that is a key part of what we monitor to ensure that there are controls put in place, both proactive and reactive, to ensure that we do get the required information. Program 4, which is asset and liability management, as I've indicated, this is the program that was specifically audited in terms of performance information. They achieved 71.43%. The not achieved was in terms of the MFMA submissions relating to tariff adjustments. And the work that what ALM is doing has significantly increased in terms of the requirements of stakeholder engagement, both internally and externally of Treasury. But specifically, when these kinds of requests come to ALM, to ensure that ALM engages internally with other divisions so that decisions are made not in isolation, but in reflection of all of the work that Treasury does. As the committee knows, increases in stakeholder engagement consequently increase the time. And almost all of ALM's work is legislated in terms of time. So therefore, we monitor both the turnaround time as well as the extent of success. And it is in this area that ALM will put in additional controls to ensure that we are able to do additional stakeholder engagement but maintain the determined time frames for this work to be done. Program 5, this is our largest program in terms of indicators. As the committee will know, this is a program that we are paying specific attention to in terms of performance. Historically, we've had challenges in this program, and you will see that we certainly, though, that intervention and with the significant efforts and commitment of these two divisions, which is OCPO and OAG, they've certainly addressed some of their performance weaknesses, although we still have weaknesses that we need to address. And in the recent strategic planning session of the EXCO, we have agreed that we will continue our special intervention in Program 5. Program 5 achieved 84.38% of the indicators. I do want to draw the committee's attention to the challenges that Treasury has faced, in that there has been significant increase in the demand for Treasury's work in certain areas. And this has placed a considerable additional demand on the resources of Treasury. And specifically, I'd like to point to the fact that we conducted 62 criminal investigations in this financial reporting period above our plan 30. Now, in order to develop these targets, given that they're predictive targets, we have no idea how many investigations we would have. We used trend analysis, and the trend indicated that we would have roughly 30 criminal investigations, and in fact, we conducted 62 reports, well above the plan 26. And we delivered 6 specialized audit reports above the plan 4. Also, as the committee will know, recently And with great sorrow, we lost the head of our Special Audit Services Unit. And our thoughts constantly go out to her colleagues who are valiantly and with great commitment continuing to deliver this key work that National Treasury does. In terms of Program 6, the key work that we do here is to continue to ensure that government's voice is heard globally and continentally in terms of economic policies. And I'm pleased to say that consistently, Program 6 has achieved 100% of their targets. Program 7, which is linked to JEPA, and again, I'll just remind the committee, our monitoring in terms of National Treasury is in terms of the SLA between ourselves and JEPA. JEPA as an institution is audited separately, and their organizational well-being and their APP is audited separately. This is only in terms of the specific SLA between ourselves and JEPA. Program 8, just to remind the committee, this will be the last time that we report on Program 8. In terms of our new strategy for this current financial year, we will no longer report on Program 8. Program 8 has been now closed, given that GTAC has their own APP and their own audit process, and so we've taken them out or extricated them out of Treasury. And the areas that remain, such as the Jobs Fund, for example, has been located in the respective programs that we currently have. Also, if I can just at this moment take a pause and add to the input by the DM and the DG in terms of the IFMS. I did want to just indicate that on the matters of IFMS that was particularly raised by the AG in their presentation, significant work has been done since this audit has been closed in this financial year on matters raised by IFMS, around IFMS, and as we had committed to the committee that we would especially intervene in this area, and we will present as has been agreed. But just for me to close in terms of performance, the governance documents that have been referred to by the AG have all since been approved, such as the charter, etc. The governance structures that were referred to by the AG have all now been revamped and are now meeting regularly. And in fact have met more than is required in order for us to continue the regeneration of the governance structures. The unit has been resourced, and we are pleased to inform the committee that a chief director for IFMS has now been appointed after a significant search. And finally, that implementation is being fast-tracked and will soon include the rollout of the e-recruitment system. In terms of Program 8, we achieved 77.78% of our indicators, remembering that currently, that historically the Jobs Fund was located in Program 8, but has now since moved to Program 3. And there was partial achievement in the main that was spoke to the integrated zones in terms of the acceleration of economic integrated zones. We await for information, as always, from municipalities and metros, as well as from the Jobs Fund, given that often there is a fallout between when a project is approved for funding and then when the actual contract is signed. Through our vigorous engagement and oversight processes, projects often fall out. In terms of human capital, and I'll be ending here and handing back to the DG, who will then refer to the CFO for our financials. Just to give you an indication, our vacancy rate is at 11.8%. Our total staff complement is 1,045, of which 88 are black as per the designations, 59% are female, and 0.76 are persons with disabilities, noting that National Treasury is specifically wanting to increase and required to increase the number of staff who are persons with disabilities. Treasury prides itself on our promotion internally, and a total of 22 promotions were made internally. 96% of our SMS members entered into performance agreements. Please note that whilst we noted that the AG raised issues of consequence management, National Treasury has a robust consequence management protocols that are applied, and those who did not do so, the performance agreements, they were not eligible for performance rewards, and 38% of employees participated in skills development and leadership programs. My final input in terms of this is in terms of the IFMS and the consequence management. I did just want to indicate to the committee that we have continued with the consequence management in terms of officials. Whilst we remind the committee that no Treasury official was found guilty of corruption, there was a lapses in management and performance, and based on that, we are currently undergoing disciplinary hearings. Also, legal processes are currently underway in terms of recovery with regards to service providers, and that process is ongoing, and we're expecting it to come to a finality in the very near future. On that note, if I can hand back to the DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Laura. The final part of our presentation will be done by our CFO, Priya Lachman. Priya joined us a few months ago, and she's brand new, and she's appearing for the first time to this committee, and she will take us through just the financials and the high-level numbers, and from there, Chair will be ready to take any questions that may come. Priya, if you can just maybe start. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Standing Committee on Finance, Honourable Deputy Minister of Finance, executives and colleagues. Yes, Chair, I am. Am I audible?
Yeah, maybe Priya is not there. Maybe let me continue just in terms of the high-level numbers.
Hello, DG. Hello.
I'm here.
Hey, can you assist?
DG, I'm here. Can you hear me, colleagues?
Yeah, but the DG can hear you. We don't know what the problem. Alan, can you?
Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you.
Deputy Minister, can you hear Priya?
Yes, Navato.
There seems to be a challenge with the DG, and we can't lose him because all these officials that are presenting fall report to him, and he has to intervene at some stage. DG, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now. Hello, DG. Okay, Alan, you will assist in reconnecting the DG so that is part of the meeting while Priya is going ahead with the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can just start again. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, members of the Standing Committee, Honourable Deputy Minister of Finance, executives and colleagues of National Treasury and Auditor General. Thank you for this opportunity for presenting. Laura will control for me while I do the presentation. Laura, if you could just put the presentation up on screen for me. Okay, I'm going to go straight into the meat of the presentation around the financial performance for the year 2019-20. As already alluded to by both Deputy Minister as well as DG, we have achieved a 97% overall expenditure against our appropriated budget. The under expenditure is largely due to the compensation of employees on a smaller amount, as well as the more material underspend is on the payment of capital assets, which I'll go into detail just now. The underspending I'm going to go into right now on the annual financial statements is in relation to, it's in relation to the transfer payments as well. I'm going straight into the variances that have contributed to our underspend, which is on slide 20, which is in relation to the International Bank of Reconstruction and Development, as well as a certain unspent funds in relation to the IFMS, as well as the Municipal Financial Recovery Services Project. As I've already alluded to, some of the unspent allocation was due to compensation of employees, which is because of the vacancy rate that has already been elevated in the report presented by the by AG. Okay. In relation to the audit report outcome, are we there yet, Laura? Okay, thank you.
Sorry, Pierre, this is Alan. Laura is off. Can you just indicate what slide you're on?
Okay, I'm on slide, if you just go further down, continue, audit outcome, here we go, thank you. National Treasury has obtained an unqualified audit with material misstatements and emphasis of matters as already alluded to by the Auditor General's report. The material misstatements as well as the emphasis of matter relates to irregular expenditure of 249 million. The main contributor of this to irregular expenditure was the 140 million as well for the IFMS, as well as 82 million from various other business units. Some of the detail, just if we make a comparator year on year, we have made an improvement in terms of the reduction of the actual irregular expenditure to the tune of just over 20%, over 25%, sorry, year on year in the actual irregular expenditure occurred year on year. The other material issue in terms of the matter of emphasis was around the IFMS matter, which again AG has already elevated in their report. And I'm not going to go into the detail around the lengthy dispute process. We've exhausted that discussion together with the resolution as to how we are going to be managing this matter through the Oversight Committee. The other material issue in terms of the actual misstatements, which also has been elevated to elevated by Auditor General, was on the financial statements in the disclosure on certain balances. And these largely relate to the advances and payable, which were understated by 12.96 million, for the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant, which was retained by GTEC since 2012 and 13, 148.8 million in terms of unspent funds for the Jobs Fund, which was also retained by GTEC prior to the formalization of the arrangement between Public Finance and GTEC. The other amount that was misstatement and had to be restated was 23 billion on the transfer of functions, which was stated as information that was on the space on the comparator notes for the 2018-19 financial year, which was more for information for the reader of financial statements as opposed to actual disclosure, and AG had advised that we then remove that in its entirety as opposed to providing more information to the reader of the financial statements as opposed to just disappearing completely off the apps. However, with this discussions with AG, we eventually did restate that. Then also the understatement of contingent liabilities. This was largely around cases that the department is busy in litigation with, which was understated by 54 million. However, there has been processes that have been put into place with adequate review of the contingent liability schedules, as well as the registers that are maintained by legal for completeness and accuracy purposes going forward. The other material amount that was misstated and had to be restated related to an amount of 113 million, which was received in July 2020 and was disclosed as a non-adjusting event after the financials. However, because we had already envisaged, or there was evidence that pointed to the fact that we anticipated these monies before the end of March, which was a payment from Sanlam via Sasria, we then amended to amend the financials and restated this amount. If we can just continue, thank you. Okay, in relation to the irregular expenditure, and this goes to the mitigation plans or the audit action plans, partially to reduce irregular expenditure, one, and two, to mitigate against future such irregular expenditure. We are in the process of, and before I go into that, as I've already alluded to, is that there has been a reduction year on year that we are slowly trying to reduce even further going into the next financial year reporting. The irregular expenditure reported at 388 million in total, which includes for the current, the year under review for the 2019-20 financial year of 249 million rand. This largely is contributed to the 83 million of irregular expenditure, which has since been condoned, and 133 million rand of irregular expenditure coming from legacy contracts from prior financial years. The department, however, is also in the process of finalizing condonation to the tune of 242 million rand in relation to various items that are still sitting on the irregular expenditure register, which we envisage and our engagement with finalize with the view of finalization of condonation with the Office of the OCPO. Irregular expenditure to the value of 21 million is still being investigated, and with the view of condemnation, with hopefully in the next month and a half that we've got left in the financial year. However, that amount is a problematic one, which we are still busy with trying to finalize. If you can continue, thank you. Going further into details around the remedial action plan that we envisage to mitigate against firstly to remedy the current findings that we have on the financial statements, as well as to mitigate against same in terms of recurrence going into the new going into the next reporting cycle. There has been an audit action plan which has been developed to address all audit findings and underlining internal control failures, with such that there is a dedicated committee, I think Laura has also alluded to, which comprises of senior managers together with internal audit, as well as the chief risk officer, to operationalize and oversee the progress of the audit action plan, to provide early warnings to ManCo for intervention, and obviously to then, with the intervention of internal audit, to clarify and verify the action, that the action plan as indicated or as reported is adequate enough to address the finding. I think in detail, DDGs are also held accountable in or held directly responsible via this process, and reports are provided to the DG on a quarterly basis as well as to the audit committee. All non-compliance and deviation to SCM processes are being reported to DG and the minister on a monthly basis through our Section 40 report. And as well as regarding deviations, we are trying to minimize those as far as possible. And obviously, in terms of the findings that one may have picked up in the audit, that the relevant delegated official or authorities regarding deviations are adhered to. And we make sure that that we are following the correct delegation when applying for those and approving and implementing the same. I think also as already elevated once again by AG's finding was around the vacancies, which also showed fruition in some of the underspend, undercompensation. Some of these critical vacancies, such as the DDG economic policy, assets and liability management, together with, which is a good sign in terms of IFMS moving forward, the chief director has been appointed, together with a permanent appointment of the chief financial officer as being myself. One key area, I think also once again elevated by the Auditor General's report, was SCM matters. And one of the root causes which we've identified was around the capacity constraints in SCM, which are being addressed through the filling of key vacancies within the unit. The other matter elevated under SCM matters by Auditor General was on contract management processes, wherein you either find that the contracts are being extended without proper authority or without the correct delegation, or overspent in its entirety. This has already been substantially revamped to ensure that the accuracy of reporting in relation to contract management as well as contract performance, which ties up with the actual expenditure against the contract, has been revamped. In addition, which is a key issue which once again has been elevated by Auditor General, was around the credibility and the level of misstatements in the financial statements. This is a key area which already has reviewed in terms of where the internal control deficiencies have lied in the preparation of the financial statements and the credibility thereof. We found that there needs to be a higher degree on not just the preparation, but more on the review processes. And what we've done already is prepared project plans that adequately provides for time for the review processes at various level, including the internal audit, which will be assisting in the key areas and the key risk areas already identified by Auditor General in terms of one, new findings, and two, repeat findings that were elevated in the management, the audit report already by Auditor General. So to give the level of assurance around the credibility on the financial statements, we've already begun work at the beginning of January in preparation for the end of the financial statements. Our dry run has already been in the form of the third quarterly interim financial statements, going through a process through internal audit as well as the review process as an early warning system for us in preparation for the financial statements, together with having regular updates in terms of the progress around the preparation as well as identification of the early warning systems in terms of timelines together with the review processes for the financial statements. And I think that has already been addressed in terms of the last bullet point, which I kind of expanded on in terms of giving the assurance around the audit action plan that has already been implemented. If we can go on to the final slide, I think we've done with the that was my last slide. Sorry, I thought there was one more. Thank you, committee members, for allowing me the opportunity to present for my first time at the standing committee, and I hope I've given adequate information together with detail that may assist committee members with answering some of the questions that may have already been required by the members, as well as adequate information if any new questions would be presented to us to answer as NT. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Our input ends there. Thank you.
Hello.
Oh, Chair, thank you very much. I was saying, I don't know if I was muted, I said our presentation ends here. No, give me Pretoria, right in the city of center of Pretoria. I don't know what's wrong. I must go back to Brett.
Okay. So you are done, DJ, with your team?
Yes, Honorable Chair, we are done. Thank you very much.
Okay, DJ and DM. Honorable members, that's the presentation from National Treasury on the annual report. Alan, you will assist me to identify members who like to ask questions and make comments. Over to you, members. Hey, Vessels, are you here? I see your name on the screen.
I'm here, Chairperson.
Who can
How are you? Good and you?
By all good. Noxid.
I'm here. Hello.
What about handing over to Vessels to chair the last session of the meeting?
You
will go very fast.
In the spirit of collective leadership, we can allow Vessels.
Yeah, you take the whole country, that works.
Okay, we don't, it doesn't, Alan, do you see members who like to ask questions?
Yes, Chair, there's Hill Lewis, Mabiletas, Kosana, and Ms. Abraham.
Hill Lewis, Mabiletas, Kosana, Honorable Abraham, and where?
And Prolong.
And, hold on.
Any Murulong.
Murulong. Okay. Honorable Lewis, over to you.
Thanks, Chair. The DG used the phrase exacting oversight. The Treasury implements exacting oversight over the entities for which it is responsible. And I just think that that's not really true, given the fact that the land bank is in a state of collapse, and the PIC is guilty of the serious corporate governance concerns that have been outlined. I think the Treasury has to take some of the responsibility for the problems at the entities for which it is supposed to exercise exacting oversight. But that is not what we are seeing right now, and that shouldn't be claimed. Then if I can ask some questions of Laura, Mrs. Mseme, the performance contracts, it would be helpful if the Treasury could table for this committee the performance contracts of the SMS team, so that we can see what the targets, the KPAs are, and how that performance is measured. So for example, you've just gone through all of the targets that have been missed. So it would be interesting to see whether SMS members received performance bonuses, despite the fact that these targets from the APP are missed. So perhaps you can just answer that as a direct question. Did, which members of the SMS team received performance bonuses in light of the targets missed? And if you could table those details, I'd be very grateful. Then finally, to the Director General himself or to whomever wants to take this question. This is the first that I've heard that GTAC is being removed. I didn't quite understand the point that Mrs. Mseme made about removing GTAC. Is it being removed from the Treasury to a different department, or where is it being placed? Because, Treasury and the Minister in particular has championed the idea of zero-based budgeting. Now, GTAC is the body that does the spending reviews, which I've been reading through in my spare time on the website. And those spending reviews are essential to zero-based budgeting. That's how you do it. That's the only way that you can do zero-based budgeting, is doing a proper spending review. So it's odd to me that you are championing zero-based budgeting on the one hand, and then there's some kind of move happening to GTAC, which I don't understand, basically putting the distance between National Treasury and GTAC. So if you can just explain that in more detail, what's happening there, and perhaps give us an update on those spending reviews and progress with zero-based budgeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Lewis. Honorable Mawileta.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Deputy Minister, DG, and the officials for the presentation. I'm happy to hear that on remedial and action on finding raised, there's an audit action plan that has been developed to address all the audit findings. But I couldn't help it if you can, and on page 12, on program 5. I'm going to follow up this one under achieved. No consolidated annual financial statements on national departments, public entities, and reconstruction and development program, but particularly on this one. 333 municipal officials trained in financial management competencies less than the planned 1,000. I think you could have done more, but then I will be happy to just to follow up on the remainder of that 1,000. When are you going to do that? When are you going to train them? Because if you don't have a program that to train all of them, we are still going to have problems in the municipalities, and that is where the core of our existence is. For the people and functions and technical specification on IS, this one you've been talking about it, but this one of municipal officials, you have trained 333, and what about the others? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. But what was Supermakar? The next one. Tony, just got on.
Sure, I'm done.
Yes, you are audible, honorable, my village.
Mm,
our greetings and compliments of the new year to yourselves, the Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, the DG, the Treasury Team, and the AG Team. Now, we want to welcome the report of the Treasury, I think starting with the remarks made by the Deputy Minister and the DG. I think we concur, Honourable Chair, with the Deputy Minister, when he says that our economy is unpredictable due to the rippling effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, and also that the challenges of load shedding, they've also had a negative effects in most of our businesses. So these are two serious challenges that we are grappling with, I think, as a country, which obviously they will have a serious negative effect in our economy. But I want to, I think, welcome the performance of the National Treasury in terms of achieving 83% of their set targets. I think that is very good. And also in terms of spending 97% of their appropriated budget, I think that is also very good, Honorable Chair. However, Chair, it's quite unfortunate that the National Treasury is still grappling with the challenges of fruitless and waste expenditures, and more importantly, issues of irregular expenditure, which is at the tune of about 249 million rands. I think that's not a good thing, because I think the Treasury, I think, should be leading by example on issues of financial management. Because when other departments and other government entities and other spheres of government are not performing, they normally go to the National Treasury to seek assistance on matters of finance and stuff. But I think if they would realize that also National Treasury is having serious challenges with issues of irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, misstatements in the financial statements and all those things, I think it's not a good thing. I think the National Treasury has to definitely improve on that. I've heard in the presentation that there is a special committee of DDGs and other senior officials who are dealing with the audit action plan. I'm just asking myself as to how effective is this particular structure, because it was evident in the earlier presentation of the AG that there are issues that have been raised in previous years, but they keep on coming back, which are not being attended to by the National Treasury. So what I'm asking myself is, how effective is this
special committee that deals with the audit action plan. Because if that structure is effective, I think issues that are raised this year, they must not reoccur in the next financial year. So I'm worried about the effectiveness of this particular structure in the main. And coming to the issue of staff complement, in terms of demographics, I think it looks very good. I think it's a fair representation of the demographics of our country. Safe to say on the disability, I think the National Treasury is underperforming because it's only less than 1% of their staff which are people with disability. And I think as the government, it's always being accused by that section of our people with disabilities, that the government is not taking them serious, is not considering them and stuff like that. So I think this is also evident that we are unable to reach the required percentage in this particular regard. So I think it's an area that the National Treasury needs to focus on and make sure that they reach the required percentage in terms of employing people with disability. Now, thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Our greetings to the two icons in Mpumalanga, Dr. Noche Mungkwewa and Dr. Mahlangu.
No, I will, Honorable Chair.
Yeah, they are the icons in the art and culture sector. So we should always honor the forebearers. Noxie, from the city of Credoc, the city of Zimbabwe.
I'm right here, Chair. Thank you.
Yes.
The metro. The Credoc Metro.
Louis, you are promoting the metro, you are creating problems.
Actually, the DA is looking for our municipality, so maybe they think it's a metro. If not, please leave it alone. It's a small municipality.
But the salary of the municipal manager, once it's a metro, it will take the whole budget. Over to you,
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me once again salute the Deputy Minister. I didn't think I did at the beginning. Deputy Minister and the DG as well as the entire team. I wish to especially welcome Priya's presentation. It being her first, she's done very well, very, very well. I have just a few questions, which are clarity-seeking questions. On the last matter, on SCM matters, she points to a contract management challenge, but she says that has since been revamped, accepted. But my question is, have there been consequences for wrongdoing? That's the first one, Chair. Secondly, my second question is partly related to the question, the question that was asked by Honorable Kosana on the Audit Action Plan Committee. Yeah, they call it the Audit Committee. Now, there, my specific question is whether the DDG's account monthly or quarterly. I didn't get that, and I thought you said quarterly, and that's a bit worrying. However, because if that is the case, it will take time before they see the warning signs in terms of their spending. However, I just needed that clarity. My second clarity question, Chair, is on what Priya referred to as OCPO, which she mentions together with the 242, which was condemnation and is also an, in fact, it's registered under the irregular expenditure register. Now, it's always assumed that we know all the abbreviations, but I would like to know what is OCPO stands for and what it does. My second last question, Chair, is for the DG, as this speaks to the issues of social partnering. I've got this question around the fund that was put in the banks, whether there is progress in the commercial banks assisting the financial communities in disbursing the funds. The last we checked on this, Chairperson, there was a very minute percentage of funds disbursed, and there was still a lot to be done. And it seemed as though there were glitches in as far as the banks were concerned. I just want to check whether those glitches were addressed and how far are we now in terms of ensuring that the banks disperse the funds accordingly. I have heard that the AG's office will, I haven't heard it from the DG who is leading implementation. If he did say it and I did not hear it, then I want to apologize. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Noxie. Honorable Mrolong, so the Renek.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, Comrade Deputy Minister and DG. You know, as we welcome the Audit Action Plan, we reiterate our concern that, you know, this department is responsible for, amongst others, expenditure management and cannot have such high levels of irregular expenditure. We're also concerned, and one of the honorable members have raised this concern, that we are also concerned about oversight which is exercised by National Treasury over its entities. Can you help us dismember the process of board reporting to the National Treasury? In fact, how are these boards reporting to the minister? Can you take us through the reporting mechanisms? How is the minister, you know, resolving the issues of boards at both IRBA and PIC? What is the time frame for resolving these matters? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mrolong. Let me just ask one question, though I'll make comments at the end. The issue of the State Bank, Deputy Minister, for the past year or two, the minister kept on saying that it's a responsibility that he has delegated to you. But we don't see any progress, either in the form of a bill or a discussion paper as to how far you are in regard to the State Bank. If you can shed light in that regard, because surely establishing a bank in South Africa is something that's very, very expensive. The threshold in terms of the money that somebody should have before he establishes a bank is quite very high, and it's making so many people to be excluded in the mainstream of the economy. So it's a matter that I would like you to respond to. But over to you, Deputy Minister, DG, and your team.
Thanks, Chair. May I allow the DG to go first, and they will deal with the, all the questions that have been asked, and then I'll come back, including answering the question that you've asked on the state bank. DG, over to you, please.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and thank you, members, for the questions. Maybe if I go through all the some of the questions, and Laura and Priya will take some. Just in terms of the issue about the oversight role that we play on entities like the Land Bank and others. Firstly, I think, Chair, we have to recognize that our role obviously will be limited, you know, very limited in that there are boards, number one, of these state-owned companies. They've got certain fiduciary responsibilities, and then there's also the minister who overlooks all of them, including the minister still overlooking the treasury. And for that, you know, in that way, we are also regarded as one of the entities, if you think about how the ministry is structured. So then there are some officials in the public entities oversight governance unit in the treasury, and mainly also in asset and liability management of some of the old entities that only across the whole of government, by the way, including others that have got guarantees that we will look after ensuring and only focus on issues around financial performance and related matters. There's also the relationship also is governed by the, you know, shareholder compact that obviously is signed, as you can imagine. And then in the regulatory arrangements are clear in terms of how they report on Mrolom and how they account and how often do they account in terms of the report. But where there are areas of lapses of governance, then you obviously have seen the Minister of Finance acting when need be. Now recently was on the ERBA board. And also in ensuring that, you know, boards are replaced here and there as and when they have to be replaced. So the limitations are there that obviously are, you know, defined in terms of, you know, some of these, you know, regulatory or entities, or sorry, acts of parliament that establishes the student companies. So what we are able to do, obviously, is to lift the issues for the board and for the chair to engage directly with the minister, and then we arm the minister with information, and then they are held accountable. We have had endless engagements with the boards at the ministerial level, in particular the Land Bank over in the last financial year, including previously, whereby we engage on pure matters of performance and including financial performance. And when need be, obviously the minister acts, and he has acted in some case. Now, insofar as the PIC is concerned, as an example, same arrangements where there's an oversight that the minister has on the entity, and not directly, you know, as treasury per se in terms of deciding to what actions needs to be taken, what are the arrangements around how they, you know, invest monies, etc. It remains the PIC in terms of the board, as insofar as its own fiduciary responsibilities are concerned. So there's a fine line there, and then we obviously don't want to be crossing the line in most cases. But however, the concern is noted, and the exerting the pressure or the oversight that we're talking to, Honorable Hill Lewis, obviously it was in that context that I had just explained, that we'll continue keeping an eye on the ball insofar as the performance and bringing to light if there are any issues that suggest that these entities may provide a risk, as it is now, to the fiscal, and that's what we are safeguarding at all material points in time. Now, there's also an issue, and Laura can come back later on, GTEC. GTEC is still a very part of the National Treasury. It's still a component of the National Treasury, and it's insofar as its own reporting arrangements for the purpose of this particular engagement, annual performance plan, strategic plan, and how it's been accountable from a reporting point of view, because they've got their own auditing process, They've got their own strategic plan and their own annual reporting, and they have to then account separately. But however, the activities of GTEC are integral in the activities of the National Treasury, and it remains a government component. So, you know, just Laura will explain that later. Now, there's also a question around the credit guarantee scheme, and I'll end there and Laura will come in. The credit guarantee scheme, as Honorable Abrahams was asking earlier on, the point here is that it's a tool that we made available as part of the package that the President announced last April, and there's a 200 billion rand facility that's there. It's not our money that we have put in, no. It is a scheme that the banks administer, and based on set criteria. All we have been saying is that it's a scheme that is accessible, that should be accessible to businesses to access, for them to meet the challenges as a result of COVID, where businesses are on the collapse or brink of collapse or even closing down, being non-functional. So we were saying that the resources and banks should then open up and recognize the challenge of these entities. There were some thresholds that the bank came up with right at the beginning, and some criteria that was subsequently changed to ease the accessing of these resources. Now, the reality of the performance of the scheme is as follows. This is a business decision that each individual enterprise will have to take. And these are not grants, these are loans. So if the entity decides not to take a loan and they don't like the terms, because this is not free money that the banks are giving, there has to be, and there is some criteria that says, all we are doing is to guarantee this money in case there's no payment. It doesn't mean also that we just kind of a backdoor. Some people are even saying we should actually do it and make sure it's a grant. It's not a backdoor arrangement where businesses will be granted free money as such. If that's what the decision should be, and government processes, including the process within cabinet, decides that, then it's a different thing. But here, this thing remains a loan scheme. It remains the fact that there will be some criteria that there will be those who qualify and those who don't qualify in terms of set criteria. And all it's a risk-based credit guarantee scheme that we expect that the banks should and will still have to exercise some kind of risk mitigation measures, and including some criteria that must be. So again, businesses cannot, be forced. But also, we also expect the bank, and that's the ongoing conversation, we expect the bank to ensure that ease of the conditionalities that are there and the conditions that are there in order for them to be able to make these loans accessible to majority of the businesses that are hard hit by the COVID, by the pandemic challenges in their own enterprises. So I'll ask Laura Chair to just carry on with some of the questions, and I'll check through the notes that I took if there's some questions that I have to come and report to.
Thank you so much, DG, and thank you to the committee for these useful questions. If I can start in terms of the performance contracts, I'm assuming the request is for the DDG's performance contracts as opposed to the SMSs, because that would be all directors, chief directors and DDGs. So if I could just explain, because I think this will answer the question in a much more constructive way. National Treasury has a highly advanced planning ecosystem, and obviously the monitoring and reporting reflects that planning ecosystem. To the extent that we have, as I indicated to the committee previously when I presented our APP, that we've introduced an entirely new planning instrument across Treasury. And that is that we plan at chief directors. So we have a specific operational plan for all 64 chief directors in National Treasury. We then have a divisional plan. We have a program plan. We have the APP, and we have the MTSF. On each of those levels, we have plans. We've also introduced, because the MTSF is a five-year plan, we've introduced an annual plan to assist us to make sure that we deliver on those milestones. Now, the APP has to be reflected in the operational plan. of the division, the operational plan of the division, and all of those objectives of the operational plan automatically become the key performance areas for the DDG, plus that they have addressed audit findings. So their performance agreement is directly related to the divisional operational plan. Their KPAs are the operational objectives of their divisional plan, which is then linked to the APP. For chief directors, their performance agreement also is pre-populated, with their key performance areas being directly reflective of their divisional operational plan. This means that the performance of a DDG is made up of the review of all of their chief directors plus the audit findings. And in that way, we ensure that the reporting of National Treasury is significantly taken down to the lowest possible level, because our work happens in the operational coalface of chief directors, and that our monitoring links each a tier to the tier above. And you can directly trace that from chief director to DDG to APP to MTSA. On the matter of performance bonuses, no, there have been no performance bonuses in National Treasury for this particular reporting period, and I can indicate that our DG has recommended to our executive authority that there will be no performance recognition for National Treasury, given the health of the fiscus, given the pressures on the wage bill, and given Treasury's performance. I can indicate that that's where we are on that matter. In terms of GTAC, definitely Treasury is not extricating themselves or alienating GTAC. As I indicated when I presented the strategic plan and the APCP, that historically GTAC is a government component of National Treasury. But historically, as GTAC was maturing and given the direct value chain between GTAC and National Treasury, GTAC was located as a program in the main in the APP of National Treasury. However, GTAC has matured, and it was always the intention of both GTAC and National Treasury that at that point that GTAC was sufficiently able to, that they would then develop their own APP and be audited accordingly, release their own annual report. We came to that point a year ago, and therefore, as part of the new five-year strategy, we have shifted GTAC so that it is wholly represented in its own APP. Just to confirm, there was incidents where we were double counting, because obviously GTAC was then recording for their own APP, and we were equally recording, and that's not best practice. So now GTAC reports on its own. They remain part of Treasury. They're still our important component, but all that we've done is separate the planning and reporting. Given that GTAC almost wholly reported into Program 8, other than two of our other projects, it did not make sense to keep Program 8 opened, and so we closed Program 8 down, and we've reallocated those two programs, InfoB and Jobs. And in fact, this is indicative of the maturing of GTAC as an institution and the reporting relationship between NT and its government components. In terms of Program 5, in those two particular indicators, can I just indicate the reasons for underperformance? And we always welcome the oversight of the committee. The reason why the consolidated annual financial statements for national departments and public entities, etc., was underperformed was because we had a number of late submissions of audited information from institutions. So in that financial year, this is an indicator that obviously will be reflective of the previous financial year. There were a number of audits that were led between the auditees and the AG, and that then had a consequential effect on this indicator. On the matter of the underperformance in the municipal officials' trained financial management competencies, we agree with the committee that this is an indicator that we need to pay careful attention to. But the reason why we underperformed in that area was because there were fewer learning outcomes endorsed by LGCTA. And this then had a consequential impact on the actual number of programs that we could conduct. But we will certainly keep a specific monitoring on this indicator. In terms of the audit action plan and the effectiveness of it, whilst we agree with the committee that there have been a number of repeat audit findings, the effectiveness of this committee is evidenced in the decrease in the irregular expenditure year on year by 25%, and two, there is a decrease in the number of repeat findings, although they still are. Now, some of those are systemic and will be with Stage 3 for some time. Whilst we will do everything in our power to address and reduce the IFMS irregular expenditures, the nature of that contract may continue, that irregular expenditure may continue, and there's others. For example, the long-term contract that we have around Purcell and those other legacy systems, for example, may continue until those legacy systems are closed. The committee has made a difference insofar as it has reduced the number of audit findings, it holds the DDGs accountable, and it reports directly to the DG, which is, as you know, very important in institutions and government institutions. There are still repeat findings, and as I've indicated, we're going to pay specific attention to three areas. We're paying specific attention to our own supply chain, although the AG recognised that there had been improvement in the supply chain management and in the financial statement, there is still work to do. So that committee will manage that specific intervention, as well as the intervention in the transversal contract and IT. There are some areas within the audit findings IT that we certainly need to ensure that we don't have repeat findings. So to the committee, it is making a difference. It's work in progress. And we will certainly report to the committee as often as we can on where we are with those audit findings, and perhaps we can include it when we do our performance reporting. We can include a report on where we are on addressing repeat audit findings. Definitely, Treasury is underrepresented in disabilities. We have been for quite a while. It's a matter of concern for us, and we certainly are putting in place processes to encourage recruitment of persons with disabilities. In terms of contract management, I can assure the committee that there is consequence management in respect of contract management, and that consequence management comes to the Office of the DG for review, and on a number of occasions the DG has requested that the consequence management contemplated by the line manager and HR be increased in severity, and in that way to be clear to the organisation that as the committee has reminded us, and that we are painfully aware that it is not in the best interest of good public financial management for Treasury to have these kind of challenges. Yes, the audit action plan does report on it quarterly, but I do think that the committee is raising pertinent matters, and we commit to take it back into Treasury that committee should meet monthly and really emphasise the work that we need to do. In terms of OCPO, OCPO stands for the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. And OCPO is responsible for the standards set and the compliance to those standards around public procurement across government. And I'm sure the DG can add if you need additional details on what OCPO does. And at this point, I will hand over to the DG as I feel I've answered all questions asked. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Laura. Just to confirm and agree with Honourable Skosana and Honourable Mrolong, we cannot have an excuse. We have to lead by example. That is a point I made in my opening remarks earlier. We should be seen as the bastion on financial good governance. And if there are any lapses in governance or any suggestion that we don't take that seriously, we then obviously are breaking our own rules, if one is to put it like that. But it's something that I guess since I started in this role, it's something that I made very clear that we cannot just not be what we have to be, because it's important on our members that we lead by example. And one can imagine a complex organization like the Treasury. We'll obviously have challenges here and there, but there's no excuse for us not to ensure that everything is above board, whether it's our supply chain processes, whether it's us adhering to practice notes issued by both the Office of the Accountant General and Office of the Chief Procurement Office. As a department within the whole of government, we have to obviously abide by and lead by example. But obviously, one has to ensure that we continuously have to maintain the role outside just being Treasury as a department. This is something that we are agile, and we have to be continuously be agile, ensuring that the collapse of the whole of the systems of government is not in any way experienced, or we shouldn't even go near there. So that we will guard and we will safeguard on behalf of everyone, you included as a committee, and on behalf of every South African, to ensure that we continue to maintain the discipline needed, not only by us as a department, but by the whole government, including its own entity. So that's something that we should continue, and we sometimes remove ourselves from a department and the challenges that we are discussing today, that effectively I'm overseeing as a department. But clearly our role obviously is much, much bigger for the whole of government. Deputy Minister, I think there's also a question or two on State Bank and other questions that you may want to come in as you promised. Chair, thank you very much. I'll leave it here.
No, thanks, Chair.
Before you, Deputy Minister, before you come in, let's allow Honorable Lewis, so that when you come in, we'll be moving towards the closure. Honorable Lewis, follow-up question.
Thank you, Chair.
Abraham.
Sorry?
Over to you, Honorable Lewis, follow-up.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. So I would be grateful. Thank you for the explanation, Mrs. Nseme. I'd be grateful if the committee could be furnished with the details of the performance agreements and the KPAs. I think that will be useful for our oversight role over the performance in the APP. Then I wanted to ask a question about the appointment of the new CFO, Mrs. Lutchman. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm informed that appointment took place very late last year, around December last year. But prior to that, there were certain allegations that were under investigation in the Gauteng provincial government that had not been concluded, and disciplinary hearings in the Gauteng provincial government that had not been concluded, particularly the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, relating to tender irregularities amounting to 43 million rand. So it would be great if we could get a briefing on the appointment of the new CFO, please.
Okay, Honorable Lewis. Honorable Abraham.
Yes, Chair, just a follow-up on the credit guarantee scheme. If the Deputy Minister could just speak to that, in terms of the response that has been given by the DG, because my understanding is that there has even been an amount of money that was set aside for relief by the banks for the small businesses. And as of last year, as I was saying, the spending, I am asking the question, how far are we with that now? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Abraham. Deputy Minister, is it possible that we allow the DG to come in first, including responding to an administrative question in regard to the appointment of the CFO, then you come after?
Yes, Chair, I think that's in order. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. DG, over to you.
Yes, thank you very much. Now, thank you, Honorable, Hill Lewis. The matter was brought to our attention after the appointment was made of Ms. Lachman. She is aware, and that we HR processes. I'll just lump them some up as this HR process underway to, one, to verify the facts, two, to ensure that if there's any wrongdoing from that side, that file, only the file, is transferred to us, and then institute disciplinary measures, which we will do on behalf of Gauteng or with Gauteng jointly, and then a appropriate action will be taken. I mean, she's aware of that, and we have since, but remember, I cannot just based on that just, suspend her now. Obviously, there has to be a due diligence process that is informed by our lawyers, and also that is fair and in line with the, bargaining or call it disciplinary code as set out in terms of our labor relations process. So all of that is in place. And I can guarantee you, Honourable Member, that if there's any, thing that we will definitely, at the time, if it's a suspension or relief of duties, all of those things will be put in place. But fair process, what I'm currently engaged with, and they have to obviously make sure that we don't err on that one, and we'll obviously keep the committee informed, Chair, through you, if there are any challenges or any issue that may come, and we'll bring it to your attention. Thanks, Deputy Minister.
No, thanks, DG. There was a question on the credit guarantee scheme. I don't know if you want to...
Oh, yes. Oh, no. Maybe, Chair, we can get further details from Honourable Abrahams, because there may be some, mixing of two funds here. One is this credit guarantee scheme that I spoke about, and the other one is a small business fund, a small business department that has fund that was set aside to support small businesses, which was managed by them. So I don't know, because I don't know of any fund that was set aside by banks for this purpose. All I'm aware of is this credit guarantee scheme. And also a fund, the similar fund is also in the Department of Tourism, whereby they support the industry. And I know there's a small business development fund that was supporting or targeting small businesses. I can't think of any other. I stand to be corrected, but we can double check that with our Honourable Abrahams and Chair formally write to you on this one in response to this particular question. But currently, I may not be very clear in terms of the question that Honourable Abrahams is asking, but we can certainly ensure that we respond in writing if need be, if it's other than the two explanations I give on the credit guarantee scheme and the small business development fund that is managed by the Department of Small Business. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
No, thanks, Chair, once more. The memo on the establishment of the State Bank is ready. However, we had to have a meeting with the Department of Communication under Minister Stella Abrahams Naveni, because they are working on the post bank bill, which they are intending to publish. So we had to have a meeting with them to make sure that our concerns in the context of establishing the state bank are also addressed, but also that we don't run parallel processes insofar as this issue is concerned. So we had a meeting with them, and we will be submitting our memo on the establishment of the state. Actually, we met them 2 weeks, if not a week ago, to have a conversation on these issues and make sure that we synchronize and making sure that we are aligned. So, I do take the concern that it's taking longer, but we also want to make sure that we do it in a manner that we don't have comebacks once we set the processes in motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. Ale, before we come to the end of the meeting, are there announcements?
No, Chairperson, no announcements. Obviously, next week's meetings. Tuesday is the adoption of the committee's B-triple-R report, and then Wednesday is the consideration of minutes of last year, last term.
Okay. Thanks, Alan, and your colleagues from the committee secretariat. Thanks very much, Honorable Deputy Minister and the whole team from Treasury. I would also like to thank the Auditor General and the entire team that's present here for your presentation on the audit outcome of National Treasury. We know that under lockdown, it is quite very difficult to perform your task as unlike ever before, where you had at some stage to physically meet the officials from the departments and their entities. But be that as it may, you are able to produce credible audit outcomes. Thank you for that. And also want to thank officials from National Treasury who don't only have to run their own department, but also have to play an oversight role on other departments. Because National Treasury has a constitutional responsibility to provide leadership in terms of finances of the state. So you have got a very, very big responsibility. So when we say that you should lead by example, it is because all these other departments and entities in the whole country, not only national, remember, you are not only responsible for national entities and departments, but you are also responsible for provinces, local government, and their entities, which are more than 600 or so. So we understand the pressure under which you are operating. And if you have to fill some of those vacant posts, you are able to relieve pressure on some of the officials. So thanks very much for presenting the annual report, and then thank honorable members for coming back safe from the pandemic, and we hope that as all of us will find a lasting solution to this pandemic. It's causing havoc socially, economically, and I believe when we deal with the budget after the 24th of this month, surely the statistic in regard to economic recovery will not be something that we'll be pleased about. It's worrisome. Over the weekend, I saw a report coming from Greyhound Bus Service saying that they are going to close their business. Greyhound is a very old bus company, and so many people will be affected by the closing down of Greyhound, the shareholders, the employees, and the public. I know even my children sometimes use the Greyhound when they leave Limpopo to go to school in Gauteng. And I saw PATCO, Deputy Minister, issuing out a notice that they would like to retrench something like 214 employees. It's worrisome. I don't know. I think yourselves and the Department of Transport are looking at this issue. You can't just look at bus companies closing and say, it's their problem. It has got a serious impact on the services. PATCO transports so many people from Honorable Kosana's area, the Kwandebele area, and other surrounding areas of the northwest up to Bred, where the DG comes from, to Chane, where most of the people are working. So it is worrisome the way the economy is performing. So as we have agreed, we are going to have a follow-up meeting to discuss the IFMS and the land bank performance, because we can't allow another bank to collapse just like that. We have experiences of VBS, African Bank, and other banks. We believe that this time something has to be done in this regard. Secretariat, officials of Parliament, can you please assist us in tracking or auditing the decisions of the Standing Committee on Finance in the previous year or previous years, and put together a tracking system of some kind so that we are able to make follow-up. I say this because sometimes people think that Parliament has got no teeth, it can't bite. It just makes recommendations to the chamber and then is business as usual. No. Parliament has got a decision-making powers, and those who don't take decisions of Parliament serious, there are punitive measures. So if in the next 2 weeks or so, you can work on all the decisions that we have taken previously and assist us, how can we track them and how can we make sure that they get implemented. As we have seen, one of the recommendations from the Auditor General is that we have to make sure that we deal with issues of oversight and enhance oversight. And a day or two, was it yesterday, we're being a workshop on the importance of oversight. So compile all the decisions and put together a tracking system and how we can implement those decisions. Thanks very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Pleasure, DM.
Thank you very much.